Hi, I'm Josh, and, what the fuck was that? keep filming, keep filming!
hi, I'm Matt, and, Dead Snow 2, no more Informer, ever, Canada. It's weak.
They killed Alanis Morissette, and, there's a Dead Snow, too.
Leaky boom boom down.
Good lord. This is Charlie down in Austin, and earlier I was trying to clean up around the house, but I kept thinking of Carolina Bang and her unique take on broom use, and what I'm trying to say is I think I violated my Swiffer.
And we will be rubbing various cleaning products up against ourselves throughout this episode of Horror Show Hot Dog.
Hey, this is Charlie Dunn in Austin. Before we get going, I wanted to mention real quickly that here in Austin we had the second annual Housecore Horror Festival, which is a bunch of metal bands. Like Danzig was the closer, and Gwar was there, and this Australian death metal band named Portal, and they were wild, and Volvoid, and a bunch of other metal bands that are just crazy. Tons of movies, tons of crazy old 35mm horror movies. Lots of happy people, lots of smiling people, just a real big good time. And at the core of it, were two people, Phil Anselmo of Pantera and the Illegals and, Down and Superjoint and a bunch of other bands. And also Corey Mitchell, who's a true crime, writer, and produced the event. Huge metal guy, huge horror guy. One of the nicest, most kind folks here you'll meet. And after the conclusion of the festival this year, early morning hours this morning, Corey actually, suffered a heart attack and passed away. And, I thought it would be good to mention because, Corey was such a champion of, little filmmakers, indie filmmakers and people doing shorts and, you know, metal bands. I mean, the guy's forgotten more about heavy metal music than most people will ever remember in their lifetime. And he just does it with class and with kindness and energy. And for me personally, as long as I've known him, he was as kind and as decent and as sincere a person as you're ever going to meet. So, you know, this time yesterday, you know, hugs and congratulations and big smiles and everything. And so I thought it would be important just to mention something real quickly about just remembering Corey and all the work that he did along with his lovely wife Audra and their daughters. So anyway, that's what I wanted to mention. And knowing Corey, he wouldn't want a bunch of dour faced sadness. He would want laughing and joy and goofiness and fart jokes and all the rest of it. So we had come to the right place for honoring Corey's spirit anyway. So there you go.
All right. Cheers. And in that spirit, let's talk about a short where a guy gets his nuts cut off and put in a garlic.
It is the perfect segue, really, when it comes down to it.
Now, I have to say, when I saw the title of this, I just kind of rolled my eyes at the misspelling. He's like, Jesus, don't make it the title of your short if you can't spell it, because it's testament instead of testament or el testamento.
Did you ever get testaments?
No, I had some condiments, though.
They kind of have a nutty flavor, though.
No, testaments are a real thing.
Things that Christians with the Bible verses
They're square mints that all have, like, a cross inscribed on them, and then, yeah, the packaging has a Bible verse on the side, and it's testaments. And I remember thinking, no fucking way, that's a fake thing on the internet, until I saw them in a store, and then had to buy them, and go, check these out, everybody. But, yeah.
I hope that they picked some random-ass Bible verses, like the blessed is he who takes the babies of our children and of our enemies and dashes them against the rocks.
Right. Just like, all right. Maybe we shouldn't just have it pull randomly.
What does it say?
Yeah, just like more of the deep cuts, like not the greatest hits, you know?
Since you have like breasts like twin
the B-sides,
fawns.
You know?
Yeah, what?
It should just take the whole story of the girl who drives a tent stake through a guy's head while he's asleep.
That's Friday the 13th part.
No, that's a biblical reference in Friday the 13th. The Old Testament is great for that.
The whole series is a very complicated allegory.
It is. Jason is your Christ analog. And Corey Feldman is Lucifer.
That is pretty much bulletproof.
Well, I wasn't referring to the films when I said... If you've seen Ascension Millennium, you know that Corey Feldman is basically Lucifer. Anyway.
Although now the only thing I can picture in my... I can only hear in my head is the Reverend Lovejoy character from The Simpsons. And, like, his voice, like... Lucifer. This is like, and Corey Feldman is Lucifer. Like that. So I can picture... Like, all I can hear in my head now.
That diddly blasted. So there are two things that I really like about this short. One of them is the power dynamic being reversed, mm-hmm. where you have the dude in Jeopardy kind of thing.
We get a bit of that this week.
Yep. And the other is that apparently these girls who are, like, cutting off balls and mixing it with menstrual blood are just, like, straight-up Christians.
Yeah, that was weird.
The mythology is real all over the board.
Anyway. Yeah, because, like, it's okay. Basically, you have a dude working alone at night in a garage. Hears a woman crying outside. He goes outside, and she just, like, jumps all over him. And he's like, whoa, are you okay? And then she just immediately starts kind of trying to make out with him. And he's like, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, which is your first...
I don't get it, but I'm going with it.
If that is not a warning bell to you, of like, this is not how... Oh, maybe that guy gets so much... Fuck, he just crushes so much puss day in, day out. He's like, yes, women literally throw themselves at me like this all the time.
He's getting the mechanic groupies.
Right, but like, to me, if I were to, let's say, like, walk out the back of the BLB, you know, and there's just a random woman hunched by that dumpster, and when she sees me, grabs me, wraps her arms around me, starts making out with me, I'd be like, hello, dumpster woman.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah. I think you would check first to see if you used to be married to her.
Well, that's probably true. I have to do that more often than you'd think. But I think I would have a couple questions, such as, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
How many needles might be hanging out of your arm right now? Because this is not normal human behavior. But protagonist guy sees nothing wrong with that, so he heads inside. Her sisters show up.
Yeah.
Nail gun him to a couple tires, and then use literally his nuts run through a garlic press mixed with menstrual blood to feed to their dead mother, who then comes back to life and makes out with him?
Yeah, and, like, sucks his soul out through his face.
Right. And then they're all like, thanks, in Lord Jesus' name. And I was like, I don't understand. Whose team are you on?
Now, is this Jesus Christ we're talking about?
Exactly. They do. Do they say his last name? Maybe that's just it.
It might have been, like, Jesus McGillicuddy.
Yeah.
Who's just this weird guy.
Yeah, and he's just like, God damn it, I'm always overshadowed by that one asshole.
It's like the Michael Bolton from Office Space.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it is exactly that. Jesus McGillicuddy.
Maybe it's like Jesus W. Christ. It's even worse.
It's like, seriously, it's just my middle name. Who cares? Everybody knows it's H.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always my dad's lines. You know, my dad would say, Jesus Herbert Walker.
All that said, this is pretty fun.
Yeah, it is surprising that having them cut off his balls did not make me scream as much as when they ran the balls through the garlic press.
Which, to the point, they're severed. But I had the same basic reaction.
I guess it just means they're not coming back.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just like that. There's a finality to having your balls go through a garlic press where you're like, I am going to lead a ballless life. Then again, I've had a vasectomy. I don't think it's really that big of a deal.
Yeah,
like, sure. I noticed no difference. And they even make the fake ones like they do for dogs and shit for people. Because if you have, like, testicular cancer, they just give you a little fucking, I don't know, you know those eggs at grocery stores?
A little stress ball.
Prize.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Did they replace your balls with Kinder eggs? Yeah.
Basically, yes.
They're illegal in the U.S.
I see one of those things of, like, the deals where they have, like, in some douchebag's office where they're just, like, the little metal balls and the strings are... Like that. You know, sort of like,
oh, yeah.
That makes more sense.
Multi-use. You know?
Hang them a bit lower. Yeah. You can do jumping jacks and do percussion.
Wow.
Exactly. That's what
this is all an elaborate one-man band plan. I'm going to busk the shit out of this street.
So, yeah, there are no prisoners taken in this one. It's just kind of gruesome and go for broke. There are several good actors in this, and then there is one who is just like, hey, I can do Southern accent too.
Yeah.
Can I do my Southern accent? Because
quite literally, like, is it Lurleen is Cletus's wife on The Simpsons?
Yeah.
And is far more convincing.
And there is one girl in there who is definitely from the South. So
seems pretty natural.
It was like, hey, if she's going to do it, then I'm going to do it to you? Sure.
Sure.
You go ahead, honey.
So y'all. I thought it was biblical in nature.
Biblical in nature.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one. I'd give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think this is worth watching. Like I said, the mythology and whatever being a little shaky did in no way detract from the coolness of what actually happened.
Well, and I thought it was fun that they didn't, like, praise Baphomet or whatever. It was just, like, they're just either, like, seriously misguided fundies or Christianity is a lot different than we know it.
But you repeat yourself. what do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I would say give it a go. I mean, it's very indie-ish kind of a deal, but, you know,
I thought it was pretty.
Not a bad way to spend 6.5 minutes. Yeah. So it's like, it's interesting.
It's hard to get too upset.
I definitely
about
wanted short. To know what their deal was. Like, you know, this whole, like, their version of Christianity, whatever the hell they were doing. It was like, oh, I wonder what the hell that's about exactly. Also, you said the thing about, like, the dumpster chicken and the making out, and like, well, let's go with this. It kind of made me think of the thing in Grim Prairie Tales, where it's like, I found pregnant, a lady who's, like, down on her luck and close to death, and then, like, in the middle of the night, you hear, blah, blah, and it's like, bing, and like, oh, pretty lady, I'm going to bid her now. And it's like, and it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know about that. There's part of me that just sort of is like this whole thing, like this lady's all grimy by the thing, and then she's like jumps on him and starts like trying to make out with him, and I'll be like, whoa, excuse me, miss, pardon me, I don't know about this. Like, maybe I'm just not that way, but it's just it doesn't seem appealing.
There's
like
a fair amount of goldfish brain that happens in horror movies.
A little bit.
And especially male characters in horror movies when related to that. Like, you can have some really weird shit happen, and then it's like, oh, but I'm going to get some now? Yeah. No, I'm on the get some train.
we just pulled out a fucked up station,
but I'm on the get some train now. Clearly, it's only going to go to Orgasmville, right. Not to Shelbyville. it's I don't know. It never seems to end well, though. It always turns into the Midnight Meat Train, and they always seem surprised every time.
Yeah.
So watch it.
Don't you think that the male brain, like, that is reductive, I'll grant you, but there is some degree of shutting down of higher brain function when boobs are displayed.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I have certainly been far too distracted by thoughts of sex or the possibility of sex to be coherent or rational or even be able to politely pay attention in conversation.
Yeah, it's just like to have your warning alarms not going off.
Yeah, but I don't know. I guess I always, maybe I've just never been in the situation to have it tested where it's that perilous.
Right.
But for all I know, maybe, yeah, I would just be a ballless mechanic if the same situation presented itself.
We should get Susie or somebody to crouch behind a dumpster and weep the next time you guys are doing a show.
Again?
Well, I'm sure she does that after every show. Speaking of shows, did you know there was the three of them that we watched this week?
There were.
Picture shows.
Absolutely.
Movie films for theaters.
In the Nickelodeons. Witching and bitching is so fun. I think we should save that for last. What do you say we kick it off with Dead Snow 2?
That sounds good.
I said Dead Snow 2, Red versus Dead, or La Nieve Muerta 2, Rojos versus...
Okay. Ooh, Muertos. I like that one.
Right off the bat, did everybody have the worst subtitles in the history of creation on theirs?
I had zero subtitles.
How did you have zero subtitles?
Everything was dubbed.
Oh, you watched it dubbed.
Well, no, the voiceovers were in English, and then every other scene was in English and not dubbed.
A good chunk of the movie was in English, but the parts that weren't on mine were dubbed, and were not just, like, laughably inaccurate, because they continued the subtitles throughout the English portions, and I could see how far off they were from what was being said, but said sentences that just aren't, they're just nonsense. And I was like, this is really amazing, and that honestly made me enjoy the film even more. Huh. Because one was like, I meant to write it down, but I didn't have anything handy. But it was something along the lines of, but we can't, the fish under the tank. And as you recall in the movie, nope.
Yeah.
there's no way to
like
even...
the zombie tank. And,
yeah, and yeah. It just, nope. And so it was something like that, and I was like, what is that even about? Cool. But I was like, okay, it seemed okay, but a little sketchy early on, because the first little chunk is all in whatever language. And I was like, these are a little bad, but I can get the gist of it, even if I don't quite get it. But then when, like, the little boy shows up and starts talking to the guy and they're both speaking in English, I'm like, these don't match.
Huh.
Like, they just don't match. And if you have a person that theoretically knows English to do your translating, they should jolly well be able to just transcribe English.
So what medium did you watch this on?
Streaming.
Okay. So you had a different version than the... they actually did localized version for the U.S.?
Yeah. This was not that.
Yeah, Tommy recorded multiple tracks with the actual cast.
Yeah, so I don't know what I got, but it was not... I mean, it was fun. And also, it seemed relatively puritanical, because it would do direct translation sometime, but if the character said, oh, fuck, this is fucking bullshit, it would turn into, oh, damn, this is the worst. And I was like, weird. Not only are you, like, wrong, but, like, they changed, like, if they said just hell or damn, it was a correct translation. If they said shit or fuck, it would change to a softer word. And I was like, this is really weird.
So, yeah, don't get the Korean subtitled version.
Yeah, whatever that was. But it was, you know, but again, like I said, you could, from context, you could get it. And yeah, you were right, Charlie. Like, the vast majority of this movie is in English. So
once the zombie squad shows up, it's like, yeah, you've kind of got it basically English. I'm sad that the version that you, because here's the thing, Tommy Workla, the director, recorded. He's really, if you ever see interviews with him, like he's or any you know, spending time around him or talk to him at all or whatever, I've ever seen anything with him, he's a very cool dude, and he's very like into splattery movies and just into really cool stuff. But he also has a high bullshit, you know, kind of censor, and so like when they went to go record this stuff, from everything I understood, when they released this was that like. They recorded like five versions of the audio where they like got like, here's the cast doing everything in English, here's the cast doing everything that they can speak. They're not the English, not the Americans, but the other guys can speak in this language. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do this other version. And then like, so they had like, they really kind of got in there with the actual cast versus like the god awful Blood Glacier one. So right. Like he was, so Workla was the one that actually recorded all the different versions. So I'm kind of bummed that the one that you saw, Matt, and it doesn't surprise me because there's like five versions floating around until they actually release a heart. Pardon me. Until they release an actual hard copy,
right.
There's gonna be divergent versions, which kind of blows. But
I mean, it's the same thing like they had with the Let the Right One In, except this movie being more comical. Like I said, I actually thought it was really fun and enjoyed reading the subtitles even in the English portions. So like it didn't detract for it for me. I'm sure I lost some of the subtlety, but this isn't a movie that hinges on emotional weight.
Yeah, the subtlety is not a specialty of this film. But, you know, having had our asses burned by Blood Glacier and what was the other one? The other winter slasher one?
The past one?
Yeah, of those having been so awfully dubbed, this was great to see that they just shot the entire
Devil's
film in
Pass.
English.
Was that the one?
Yeah.
Not
Devil's Pass.
No?
No.
That one was good?
Devil's Pass was in English.
Was it?
That was the one where they go up the mountain and the thing. And
yeah, to the Detzloff Pass.
I know what title you're talking about. I'm just not going to say it because I don't want to open up a can of worms again.
Anyway. I don't know. The subtitling is read at your own risk.
So this is a movie that just straight up blasts a kid out of a window.
Fuck yeah, it does. Yeah, right, it does. We should point out, too, that Dead Snow 2 literally picks up right where Dead Snow 1 ends. Which I found immensely
where it ends.
Satisfying.
That's always fun, yeah.
Super, super satisfying when that happens in a sequel to me. We have our lone survivor that I just assumed died because of the way they cut, much like people did with, like, Evil Dead versus, you know, Evil Dead 2. But, cool, like, okay, we get to watch a little more of that, and it gets a little campy almost right away, and then as soon as he wakes up in the hospital, you're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, our tone is way over the top now. Because the first one was funny, but it wasn't like... This is Splatstick. This is Evil Dead to Evil Dead 2.
It sure
and
is,
this is the Evil Dead 2 of this
I've
this
seen
series.
People
well, this has that-
expressing disappointment in that, and it was fine for me.
Okay.
You don't have to do... You know, it doesn't always have to be grim.
Yeah. Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was going to say, it kind of... This one, you know, it's funny, because in the first movie, what's his dinghy is wearing the original name, Brain Dead, the original name for Dead Alive. This one, to me, channels that Dead Alive energy more than the first Dead Snow. I mean, I liked the first Dead Snow. I can't say the goddamn word. Snow. The Dead Snow. This one channels that. This one channels that, like, Dead Alive vibe and energy a lot, I think, a lot more than the first one does. Because it's just, I mean, if all three of us picked five ways of dismembering or killing a person or doing whatever with somebody's body, each one of us picked five different things, we'd still have a long-ass list beyond those 15.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everything. It is everything. Anything you can think of. And Josh kind of nailed it. It kind of, right from start, it's like, he's kind of throw a kid right through a fucking bar window. Like, this is the movie we've got, people. Settle in.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You, like, at that point, you're like, I know exactly what I'm in for from now on, which is just anything
exactly.
is possible. And it's great. So a survivor fights the general or whatever from the Nazi army. I forget his name now.
Yeah, Herzog.
Herzog, yeah. And so those two, you know, duke it out a little bit on the road, resulting in each of them now missing an arm, which eventually results in the awesome plot point of them getting the other's arm reattached to themselves. And the zombie arm maintains the ill will and powers of Herzog when it's attached to our dude. I don't notice that the Herzog gets any weird side effects from having dude's arm. It just seems to turn zombie.
No, he's just kind of annoyed. He's just like, he keeps looking at it like, ah.
He's just pissed. It's not as powerful as it could be, probably.
He's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
God. I love having the really asymmetrical superhero. Because he can, deck somebody with his right arm. But then if he has to throw a follow-up with the left, it's just like,
epeh. Yeah. Yeah,
it's like I can lift 300 pounds with my right arm and left arm, nothing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, those creepy dudes that are like professional arm wrestlers that have the one huge arm. He's got kind of that thing going on. Our duder wakes up, is accused of killing all of his friends because they just find all the bodies and no Nazi zombies. And then he gets the horror of finding out they've stitched the Nazi zombie arm to him. And he bribes a little kid with a promise of chocolate to unstrap him from his bed, and then while he's annoyed, his zombie arm kind of on his behalf in a very idle hands kind of way. There's a lot of that early on in this movie. Just chucks the kid not only out a window, but out of a window with bars on it. And
but that scene gets better.
It does get better because when Duder jumps out the window to leave, he tries to do CPR on the kid. He just crushes into his chest cavity.
And the way that shot is composed is an absolute work of art. Because you don't see the kid's body. You see Martin, the character Martin, like, you know, with his hands doing the chest thing. Kind of the... And then you don't see the kid's body. It's all out of frame. And it just goes... splatter of blood comes upward. Like, oh, that is so good.
Just in time for the cop to see him and think he's now just rending this poor child into pieces. Which, I mean, he is, but not on purpose.
To be fair, he was already dead.
Right.
God. Still.
And that is like the first of like the, oh shit, this is going to be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it just maintains a level of insanity, I think, for pretty much the whole movie. A highlight for me was when the Nazi zombies rip a guy's stomach open and run in two different directions with his guts.
Yeah.
And you find out that they're actually using his intestines to siphon gas from a Greyhound bus into a tank. But
of course you would. I mean, why wouldn't you?
And literally one of the zombies like sucks on the intestines and goes like, and spits it out once the gas starts flowing and gives like the thumbs up to the other guys that the siphon's working.
I do love how self-aware. That's the other thing. And Matt, you kind of highlighted it perfectly, but that's one of the joys of this movie is that not only are they driven and they have a mission and they have a thing that they have to do, but it's like they are so self-aware, which is just a delightful thing. Like, there are scenes in the battle sequences later on in the movie where, like, you know, somebody kind of gets swanged and then their arm is kind of hanging on by a couple sinew or whatever else, and then the guy kind of looks down. You'll see it in the background where one of the zombies will look down with the arm hanging there and he'll just be like, ah, you know, like you're trying to get his arm to stick back up again, like trying, you know, just like, damn it.
Well, there's a zombie,
you know,
that kind of field thing. Medic just, in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes. Just, yeah.
Like, people show up all mangled and he just like pulls all the guts that are hanging out of them, stuffs them full of straw and kind of like claps them on the shoulder and like, off you go, son, back to battle.
That's so good.
Just insanely stupid.
So the, to rewind just slightly. Yes. So the little boy, when Martin's in the hospital, because he's arrested, he's the reason why the little boy, he's trying to get the boy to untie him is he's chained to that hospital bed because they think that he killed all of his friends up the mountain. If you've not seen the first movie, they accidentally awaken a bunch of Nazi zombies. They come try to get their gold and kill everybody but Martin. In the process, Martin gets bitten on the hand and then saws off his own arm with a chainsaw, la-di-da-di-da. So, like, the cops think that he did all that stuff, and so he's chained to the bed. So in the process of, like, trying to get this kid to untie him, the little boy has taken a picture of the zombie arm, like, oh, this is awesome, zombie arm, and, like, sent it around to people, catching the attention of the zombie squad from America, who a little bit later on are thought to be professional zombie paranormal people. A professional organization of paranormal and zombie, whatever, professional type. I don't know what that said.
Yeah, CPA, like a zombie response, whatever the hell it is, or something. Yeah.
But so yeah, so that's what gets the cavalry coming from the United States, which brings in Martin Starr and Ingrid Haas and the lovely, lovely, lovely Jocelyn DeBoer.
Really, a great trio of characters.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is pretty terrible when they first introduced that idea. I was like, okay, I get they're going for a little sillier, but this is really over. Nope, okay, I'm on board. Like, I enjoyed them.
What I think makes them work is they are actually really good at what they do.
Yeah.
They come across as, like, you would expect them to be absolutely useless, and that's the direction you would expect to have it go. Mm-hmm. And then once they have all their shovels and shit, they just go for it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of great. Like, they are absolutely the mouth-breathing basement nerds, but they also are capable of pulling off what they said they were going to do.
Yeah.
I love the when they just throw a stock scene in there and then twist it. Like, going through the hardware store, pulling all the shit off the shelves, and you have all the, like, and like, you'd see, like, 700 pieces of shit that they're buying, and then they sit for, like, a good 30 seconds while the receipt prints. And there's no cuts, there's nothing to, they just kind of sit there, kind of rolling their eyes.
It's got that, yeah, it's like Girl from Ipanema by way of a receipt machine.
Yes, you know, and it's like, yeah, it is just 30 seconds and 3 feet of receipt printing at a hardware store. And when finally it's done, it's like, and they grab it and like,
but prior to that though, when they said they got to gear up once they get there to go fight the zombies, they're like, oh, we got to gear up whatever else. It's like, oh, we got to go buy stuff. We can't bring stuff whatever else. Like, yeah, they don't have firearms. We got to go get it. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this country? Like, I love it.
There's a couple good digs at America in that way. Cause yeah, it's like, God, this would be a lot easier if we could buy weapons. I know.
Yeah.
And you also do get the joke in the hardware store where, like, one of the women grabs, like, the big, like, shunk-shunk, like, gardening shears.
Yeah.
And the other one gets, like, a slightly smaller one, and he gets the little fucking thing that you would just use to, like, do a rose bush trimming.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, yes. Each of them seems equally satisfied with the size of the thing they chose. But, yeah, no, that's pretty great. They just kind of gear up and go for it. And they meet up with Martin, as Martin is at a little memorial museum thing for, I forget exactly what it was, some World War II thing, which has the weakest character in the movie to me, which
no,
is...
No.
I like the character. I don't like the way they treat him as, it's funny, get it? Because he's gay.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, I'm kind of done with the, I'm about to die, so I'm just going to go, I'm just going to say, fuck it, I'm gay.
Right. It's like, yeah, no one cares anymore, especially in a Scandinavian country, they don't care. But it just, like I said, the character himself, he's fine. He rarely does anything that's too mincy, although there's a couple things where he's mincing about in a scene that kind of bum me out. But it's just like, I can tell a couple times we're supposed to find humor in the fact that it's a gay dude, and that just bums me out.
Yeah, where he's like, I have a boyfriend, a girlfriend.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, just, he could just say, like, yeah, I have a boyfriend. They'd be like, cool, because, like, none of them would care. So, I don't, that bummed me out a little bit, because he's not gay just incidentally, which would be fine and awesome, but he's gay for comedy, I think. And that bummed me out just a little bit.
Aren't we all a little gay for comedy?
More or less.
They do get...
I don't agree. I don't think that they... I've seen, like, again, One of the Dead, like, they really play that card heavy, and it's like gets a little bit like, you get the little Rodney Dangerfield neck thing, like, sure. You know, that kind of bit.
I've certainly seen movies that are really, way worse.
I don't like that.
Yeah,
you know, but like in this one, I took him more like almost like Charlie Chaplin sort of character, where he just is like this sort of the lovable tramp kind of thing. And I think that those things, that one thing you're talking about when he says like I have a you know whatever, he kind of stumbles over that. I would almost take that in a different way, like you know in. You know, various countries around the world, everybody has different attitudes about a lot of different things. And like, you know, maybe it's sort of like you don't know what people's sensibilities are and maybe you're not comfortable and that kind of deal. And like, I don't know that it's played for like, haha, he's a fag. I think it's played more like, it's sort of like he's just really awkward. Like he's just really, really kind of, you know, just sort of awkward in general. And I don't think that they really play that the gay card real heavy, you know.
I think you're right. I don't think it's super like in your face offensive. Because yeah, there are definitely movies I've watched that it bothered me. But you know, and even recent movies, I should say. Of course, there's old movies that bother me about that. But like, yeah, even recent ones, there's ones like I don't get why it's funny to have a character be gay. Yeah. Like that's like, haha, look at this guy, he's black. Like. So? Like, that's, many people are. But yeah, I think you're right, though. They do play him a little more as just being a weird, awkward dude. But the source of that awkwardness in some of the scenes seems to be his homosexuality, which, and again, I'm probably overly sensitive because despite my best efforts living in Uptown, I'm probably getting a little bit of the hippie insidiousness creeping into me.
Yeah.
But...
the hippie in the city. I just have these images from the movie Insidious now, like dudes with like dreadlocks and tie dyes or whatever.
Exactly, and they're just like lurking up in the corner of my ceiling. Yeah, they can stick to walls because they don't bathe.
The other thing with that character too that I like is I just wanted to really quickly throw in there was that like, you know, he's dressed in like this like, you know, kind of like really, really tight sort of like kind of neon colored shirt and like kind of the, either the leather pants or kind of like shiny pants, whatever else. He's got a little bit of the eyeliner going on, the hair, the whole bit in this tiny ass little town.
Oh yeah,
and that's what I love that. I thought that was like, to me, that was one of the more charming things about the way that they set him up. Also, he's one of the characters of the first movie, and actor from the first movie, not a character.
No,
but he's in the first movie as well.
Oh, cool.
I really think when they're using him as bait, I would have rather have him just go, "Hey Nazis, I'm gay."
I know. I thought that's what they were
going
for.
That would be so great.
That was the thing. That would have been the great way to do that. Because he like throws a rock, and they have him throw it so effeminately that bummed me out.
Yeah.
And he minces even when he's running away in the swamp, and I was like, ah, these things are bothering me. And I thought like, oh, this is your way to do it. He like throws the rock and he can't do it. And he's like, hey, and it doesn't do it. He should be like, I'm queer. And then they're like, oh, and he's like, and then, like, go, like, yeah, eat a dick. Be mad at me for who I am because fuck you, this is who I am. That, to me, would have been the moment to show, no, we're totally behind this and this is cool. And again, it's not like it's their job to make that be a point in this movie. And I'm probably just overly sensitive, too, just as a comedian. Where, like, I have to think about those things. If I make a joke that refers to someone and whether or not they are gay, I have to know exactly what I'm trying to say with that joke.
Yeah.
Or at least I feel like I do. And not everybody does. And so, and maybe they did, and maybe they said what they wanted, and I just didn't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, in the middle of a movie which is hitting so many notes that are, like, fresh and interesting and fun, it was weird to have that, like, oh, it's really funny because he's about to announce that he's gay, which we already know, and then he gets killed.
Right.
We're like, yeah, no. It doesn't wreck the movie. It's just a little thing.
We should point out, too, that speaking of a movie that does a lot of things that are fresh and funny and new, it literally declares itself a movie that is fresh and funny and new.
Yeah.
Because when the zombie squad is there and they're figuring, he's like, this is unprecedented. Like, there's nothing like this in any other film. Yeah. This is a whole new kind of zombie. I'm like, this is the most meta back padding and self-congratulatory masturbation.
You know why you can get away with that? It's because of Martin Starr's big old buggy eyes. He just looks the camera, like he looks just past the camera, like because that wide eye thing is just like, oh, no, that's great.
When he's doing that, I'm like, this is the most self-aggrandizing moment in maybe any movie I've ever seen, and I love it because it totally fit. It completely fit with what they were doing, and it's like, I don't even think they're doing that to be arrogant. I think they're doing that to be cheeky and have fun, and I love it.
Oh, totally.
That. Like that's
oh,
super totally. Great. So I thought that was great.
Well, there was. At the same time, they can hit an occasional serious note, which I thought was really cool, too.
Yeah.
When they were asking, were you bitten, were you bitten? And he says, we were all bitten. We didn't become one of them. We just died.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, actually, I really enjoyed
that,
real. Actually. Yeah.
And I think the reason why it keeps being so much fun is that you give a shit about these people. Like Star Wars Girl, I was so rooting for Star Wars Girl. She was fantastic.
I was annoyed by Star Wars Girl's dialogue, but I liked her.
I think they did a decent job of making her, like, she wasn't even good at slotting those quotes into conversation, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
Like, at the end, when she says, may the force be with you, and the other girl's like, really?
That's
the one you chose? Well, and then when they're looking out at the zombies going on with the tank or whatever, and she's, like, looking through her, like, little Hoth goggles, and, like, Ingrid Hoth's character, she, like, looks over at her, and she's just like, wait, what are those? They're little binoculars. Like, what? No. It's just like, it's so great.
Yeah, you don't get to pass this off like it's no big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't do that. It's like, you know, it's like walking into a party with a 5-foot burrito over your shoulder. Like, you can't just sort of, like, be casual about that kind
yeah,
of
thing. Yeah, it's the tie-dyed shirt fedora.
Yeah.
Conundrum. Like, you know, when you put that on, you were hoping someone would ask you about one of those things. Like, you don't get to wear cat ears or a tail or a kilt and act like you
so
didn't
tired
think...
of people asking me what I wear under my
you
kilt.
You know, fuck you.
You want to know what I'm wearing under my kilt?
Right.
Sorry, sorry, kilt guys. I understand that it's a thing that, you know, they're more comfortable
and
in.
They are. I love wearing a kilt, but I kind of can't because it's just you look like that guy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going a different direction with that. Like, right. I just can't do it because I keep getting arrested for indecent exposure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I certainly exposed myself indecently. Yeah, because that is one of the things. Like, you know, freeballing and
swing low.
Anyway,
You know what my favorite line in this entire movie is? When they're describing the incident of the past where you get the Russian soldiers that he's going to raise up, All of the prisoners were shot to death. No survivors. It's beautiful, Caden.
It is really good.
Perfect.
We should point out, too, that this movie has not only just, like, Nazi zombies versus our humans. You have the Nazi zombies figure out that they can create additional Nazi zombies with Herzog being able to kind of reanimate the dead people. And then you have our human with the Nazi arm, which suddenly pays off, and that he has the ability to raise dead people that become his army, starting with the most hapless and put-upon zombie in the history of zombies.
I called him Melvin.
Oh, he's so adorable.
He's really adorable. I honestly felt a little bad, because they keep killing him and then bringing him back and then using him as, like, a way to get their car unstuck, which then kills him, and then they bring him back.
That scene is like, I can't remember. I remember seeing this in the theater when I first saw it, and, like, that scene when they, like, lodge him under the tire and he's like, trying to get the car out of there. I just, like, I was gasping, laughing, like, disgusted, and, like, it was just, like, all things at once. Throwing a hiccup and a burp in there, I would have blown up because it's just like you can't get that much output, you know? It's just like, oh, God almighty. And he does this so well, the actor. I don't know who he is.
Oh, he is great.
Who he
yeah,
is, but
I'll
like,
agree.
He's so cute. He's like a little puppy.
Yeah, and he just keeps coming back for more. Like, they keep killing him and then going, all right, bring him back and then, like, toss him in the car again. So yeah, you end up with the whole red versus dead thing is you have our protagonists go to a Russian graveyard and kind of reanimate the Russian soldiers at all to fight all the German Nazis. So you end up with this very Gangs of New York, that opening scene,
yeah.
The standoff in, like, the churchyard or whatever. You kind of have that same thing here. And it's a little Braveheart. It's a little Gangs of New York. It's a lot silly. It's one of the things that someone taught me way back when Braveheart was, like, first came out on video, because by then we'd all seen it, like, 4 times. Was when you're watching the battles, after you've seen the movie a couple times, don't watch what you're supposed to be watching. Watch the background actors. And now I do that in large melees like that. And the people that are just meh, and just barely swinging anything and, like, tapping each other and just not reacting, and then the other guys turn. And, like, it's creating just the background noise you need in a large battle like that. But it is super fun to watch. And
was it in the Lego movie in the opening musical scene where they're doing everything is awesome?
Mm-hmm.
If you watch, I don't know how many times I've watched that damn movie now, but because I just love it so much. But, like, if you watch the everything is awesome scene and just, like, look in the backgrounds of things, like, you know, when they're on the street corner and you see the coffee shop through the window, you can see somebody else paying for their coffee through the window. And then when they're up on the construction site, this is my favorite one. I watched that scene, I don't know, probably 30 times. I keep rewinding it to watch. Up on the scaffolding where they're building the buildings, you see, like, this one Lego guy in the background, like, doing the Running Man, and, like, this other guy's, like, doing this little, like, worm, but he can't really do the worm because he's made of Legos. So it's sort of like, it's just like you keep finding shit in the background, like, oh, that's so, I gotta run it again. Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
You know, so it's like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff where it's just like, it's so charming.
And it is an epic battle. I mean, that takes off the last.
This thing's huge.
20,
this one,
30
this one
minutes
for,
of the
for
movie.
Their. Well, and their budget, too. I mean, considering their budget, I mean, that is not a large-scale production. I mean, they really went after it.
They did. It's very ambitious. You know what it reminded me of is those little fake towns they built for nuclear testing?
Yeah.
It's like they found one of those, and were like, oh, so we can just trash this? Yeah, it's basically just plywood. Cool! Let's drive a tank through some buildings. And that's just kind of what they did for a while. Because I remember going, wow, they're really fucking shit up with this tank.
Right.
Like, they someone paid
blowing
for
up
this.
Baby carriages, like, and yeah, bashing people over the head.
And again, we mentioned the little boy dying in the beginning. They blow up the baby carriages. I love it when kids die in movies. Because that's usually...
I kind of do, too.
It's usually such a, like, ooh, thing where no one wants to do that. You never see a kid zombie in a Romero film. So, like, a thing like that where it's like, yep, he just chucked that kid out a window. Like, and you don't have the kid, like, sitting in a tree branch going, what happened? Right. Like you would in an American movie. He's just fucking dead. And that's just, you know, and it's like... The point is, if you're going to have a kid, then the kid has to face the same consequences in the universe of the film as anybody else does. And it's unrealistic that there's never a child in any of these places. So I was just like, oh, cool. Like, you know,
well, what about the lady with the lady pushing the older woman in the wheelchair and it's like slowing down. And she's just like, fuck it. And just leaves the lady in the wheelchair. And then the wheelchair's like, rah, rah, rah.
And the first push she does just sends her over backwards.
Yeah.
Which to me was like, okay, that was what I was told was the indication of someone that does not actually sit in a wheelchair. Because you'd know if you're in a wheelchair, you have to lean forward a little bit to prevent that from happening.
So, well, maybe she forgot because she was afraid of the zombies. This battle scene does start to lose me after a while because there are so many times where everyone's surrounded and they're on the verge of getting the shit kicked out of them, and then they kind of rally. Okay,
sure.
And then the other side starts to rally, and they can just go back and forth so many times that it was just, okay, I understand. Our main characters are going to get in a bind, and then somebody's going to save them at the last minute.
There's a little bit of
that happens three or four times.
Babe Bruckheimer fatigue.
Yeah,
where an action sequence can go so long that you're like, I'm literally out of adrenaline, guys. You've squeezed me dry. Like I but am. Just the, in I am time, the testicle though. In the garlic press. Like,
that's the title of your memoir now.
Yes, exactly.
The just in time though, you get just the hand to hand between Herzog and Martin. Yep. And Jesus,
oh,
that
scene
is
amazing.
Awesome. It's like really it's like Harold Lloyd, Charlie Chaplin, Jackie Chan throwing.
I was thinking it reminded me a lot of the Raid, actually.
Rolls down the stairs and
yeah,
ah, it's fantastic.
The choreography reminded me a lot of the Raid, you know, the Raid or Raid 2 for that matter. Same fight choreographer, but like that, like that was like we are going to use this space.
Yep.
To our advantage in every possible way we can think of.
Yeah.
And it's just like, ah, oh, it's just amazing to watch. And I just can't even imagine the how the rehearsal must have gone to really set that up. Cause it's just like pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, that had to have been a pain in the ass to choreograph and rehearse. Cause it is really fun. Like it's,
yeah.
And like we said, that is, I think the watchword for this movie is that it is just fun.
Yeah.
And the first one I thought was fun and it was good. This one amps up the fun and definitely doesn't go for a lot of real scares, if any, that I can think of. But I can see why that would bother people, but I was on board.
It's so gonzo.
I just took the tone and was like, cool, you're just turning it up. You know, we went from the last movie being like this pretty wild movie, and then you're like, well, let's go to 12, let's go to 15. And just keep going.
Well, we've touched on all these things. The kid through the bar window, the wonderful CPR sequence, which is so beautiful. You have things blowing up. You have guts being used for running fuel. You get people being bashed over the head with toilet seats. You get all every fucking thing, right? And that isn't even the most gonzo, obsoloid, weird fucking thing in the course of the movie in terms of body horror grossness. And that comes at the end of the movie.
Every now and then for a part.
Which is amazing of a song choice. I didn't, you know, like just, I don't know that it really even occurred to me, Josh, until just now when you sang it that way. Like, oh, wait a minute. Because when you fall apart, because you're a zombie, like, oh, yeah.
And that, I could only in my head do the literal music video lyrics.
Yes.
So that made it a whole other level of awesome for me because I was just going, I whip my head to the right.
And we should advance at night.
Because we're going to hurt the gymnast.
So he uses his zombie rising powers to bring back his dreadlock girl from the last movie. Now my mind's going, dreadlock girl, and it makes no sense. It's late. And then they have the car-fucking scene from Titanic.
Yep.
While Total Eclipse of the Heart plays.
Yep.
And Melvin comes hobbling up on his crutches and goes, oh. And I hear you were saying, Charlie, that they edited that scene down a lot, which is amazing to me.
Oh, yes.
Because there is no skipping. There is no, like, oh, she's going to be, you know, like a little bit fucked up, but it's going to be fine. Like, no. She is just spewing black shit from her mouth.
Yep.
And oh, yeah. It's definitely just like parts falling off of her.
Yeah. She is
no. Not- there was yeah. Wirkola shot like about 10 times as much as what's in the movie. Uh-huh. And they were like, I think they, like, the way that he phrased it, if I remember correctly, I think he said, we all looked at it and said, like, we're going to get fucking put in prison.
Yeah. So look like, forward to a yeah, really sweet DVD much. Extra at some point here. So.
Oh, I would hope that at least be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of, little bits and pieces. I mean, I don't know that I would want to see everything, but it's definitely just sort of like, once I learned that information, like, I rewatched that scene, like, oh, God.
So you don't want to see everything, just enough tasteful zombie nudity fucking. Right.
It's like, holy shit, what's on the cutting room floor?
Well, it's an arm, a dick. Right. Right. Like,
maybe think of the guy in the trapped in the car in the battery when the like zombie girl with the nipples comes up.
Oh, yeah.
There's like, I hope that Dead Snow guy saw that and went, I'll go you one better.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a
well, it made me think of both Make Out with Violence and also Dead Girl, where like they both take on the kind of zombie raping thing in sort of different sort of angles, whereas Make Out with Violence is kind of indie and sort of adorable, where Dead Girl is just awful.
I would say that this is consensual zombie love.
Yeah.
This is very consensual. This is not sort of Martin wielding his Herzog arm power. I think it's more just sort of like a well, I don't really know what it is because I have nothing to compare it to, I guess. It's in a way, it's kind of sweet. I don't know why, but it is. That was suggestive language. That was suggestive brain insertion by Matt there. One last thing I wanted to insert here was at the beginning of the movie, one of my favorite things about this movie, out of the 10,000 things I love about it, one of my favorite things about this movie is Martin's thing at the beginning where he says, well, you know, the story, you know, go up with some friends to go on a skiing trip, find some gold, awaken Nazi zombies, and all my friends died, and I cut off my arm, I hit my girlfriend with the neck with a hatchet, da-da-da-da-da, you know, cliche, right? And it's just like, there's something about that is just like, it is super self-aware, but it just tells you right from the start, like, this is the movie that we're in for. Like, you gotta know this is gonna be funny. And if you've got to stick up your behind and can't have fun with things, then you should go watch some 4-hour-long, you know, zombie raping thing from Japan that I watched last year from Fantastic Fest, because you can't have fun. You know, like, it's just, it tells you right from the start, like, this is the movie you're getting.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
So where'd you rate this one, Charlie?
I had originally done 4.5 out of 5 on my old review from 10,000 years ago, and I'm sticking with that. So I'm gonna call it 9 out of 10. Let's call it 9 out of 10. Failed his CPR classes.
Nice. Yeah, like I said, I did watch it with the world's worst subtitles that honestly didn't really even seem to hurt the movie, partly because so much of it is in English and partly because really absurd subtitles sort of fit the tone.
Right.
And I was totally on board with this being really silly and gonzo as soon as they kind of told us that's what it is. Like I said, my only minor quibble is that, like, I didn't necessarily jive with exactly how they handled the gay character. But that's aside, like, everyone should see this, you know, just like I think everybody should see the first one. So I'll say 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10 abandoned wheelchair patients.
Yeah, the most of the time this movie had me laughing while biting my knuckles, and he kind of like, but delighted, just delighted. So, I would give it an 8.5 out of 10 total eclipses as well.
Nice. Ooh. Can we take a break before we do the next part?
Yes, we'll take a break. We'll be back with Willow Creek.
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna drink something.
All right, I got
tea. All right, so next up we have Willow Creek, or Arroyo del Mimbre, if you will.
Mimbre.
And it's directed by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Written and directed.
Written and directed by... I hesitate to say written.
Of course you would.
I really don't think they're... I don't think of this as having a script, per se. None of the dialogue has, like, a spin to it where you would think, somebody wrote this. It's like, these people are talking.
I mean, isn't it supposed to be what it seems like?
Yeah.
I mean,
that to me, like, that's actually one of the strengths of it.
Let's just say it feels improvised.
Early on, not later on, earlier on, I really like them. quite a bit. I really,
you
really
like that?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, me too.
Very, very much
oh,
so.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I very much did.
But later on, but here's the thing. Later on, though, I get the thing where it's sort of like, shut up. Shut up. Just no more talking. Let's quit it. Just shush. You know, but earlier on, they have this way that, like, you know, people in relationships and close friends and people like have verbal shorthand and like the way that they interact with each other. And like, sometimes that can be grating if you're not part of the club. And I can kind of get that. But like, I really like them. I thought they were, I got who they were. Like, he was very, very much an amateur filmmaker. And so like, you don't get that kind of austere sort of self-aware business. She, you can kind of tell, like, is on a teeter-totter or whatever else, and very kind of little bits and glimmers. And so I really liked them early on. I really did.
Oh, God. I wouldn't want to spend an hour in a car with either of them. That guy is so smarmy and douchey. He reminded me of the guy in the Sonic commercials that you just – where they're in the drive-thru and saying clever shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, couldn't stand
him.
Oh,
I can see that.
And – that's funny. The lady really seemed to hate him.
I didn't get that at all.
Oh, yeah. I was like, clearly they have this, like, bickering thing going on there that is masking a deep loathing and trouble with their relationship. I wasn't surprised when she knocked down his marriage proposal.
See, I don't
in the middle
think,
of the forest.
I felt like the conversations where they are getting a little bickery was because they were stuck being forced to constantly deal with the kind of topic that the average couple, for the sake of harmony, doesn't bring up around each other.
The fact that he believes in Bigfoot
and
she doesn't.
And that's a huge deal to him. And so therefore, what the average couple does is you just don't bring up Bigfoot around each other. Just like if one of you goes to church and one of you is an atheist, you just kind of don't talk about religion much.
You also don't talk about Bigfoot.
Right.
What's that line, what's that line about Bigfoot carcasses that I love? There was a line that I loved when they're in the car, you know,
yeah,
talking about that?
We're,
like, not finding Bigfoot carcasses. And it was just like, she says it in a way that's like, it's not biting and mean, but it's like, it is, but it isn't. You know, it's like one of those things like, yeah. Look,
no, I mean, that's
look,
where
dummy.
She obviously has all these ideas that are like, okay, here's all the logical reasons that in the real world, Bigfoot does not exist. We know this. And she knows all those arguments because she is clearly a skeptic and has a little bit of critical thinking skills. He is a believer, and as you can see, no amount of evidence will cause him to have his belief shaken, which is the whole case with believers. You can't logic someone out of a position they didn't logic their way into. Part of that is what made me so fascinated by this, is watching her as the skeptic and him as the true believer. Mm. Tried, and she keeps trying to deflect, and he's like, then why are you even here? And she's like, because I love you, and I want to be here and hang out with you and have fun, and I'm willing to hold a camera while you do your Bigfoot thing. That's yeah. fine. I don't think we're going to find Bigfoot, but we get to go spend a weekend together. Like,
yeah.
And then him, if he's a good boyfriend, should be like, okay, that's cool. I appreciate that. That is her supporting him, but he has to keep picking at that scab because he wants her. Okay, well then why do you have to say there isn't one? Can't you just say maybe? Can you say there could be? And she's like, no, because I don't think that. He won't let it rest. He's the one being the dick. She's like, dude, and she goes, fine, look. Okay, if there was Bigfoot, why haven't we found a body? Well, you never find animal bodies when you go out hiking. She's like, yes, you fucking do. Because I don't even go hiking, and I've found dead skeletons of animals out in the woods. Like, of course, that's insane. And she's like, well, do we find new species every day? She's like, yeah, in big-ass wildernesses where no one lives for thousands of miles. That's different than the Pacific Northwest. And he's like, well, and it's like, okay, like, he can't be convinced, but he refuses to stop arguing. If one of the two sides is not willing to have their mind changed, then you should just drop the conversation or enjoy the debate as the intellectual exercise it is. And he can't. He's taking it personally as a critique on him, which he even says, like, I just want you to think I'm an idiot or whatever. And it's like, she's trying her best to, like, let him down gently, which is what she ends up having to do later when he proposes, like an idiot. Because it's like, yeah, dude, you're just not on the same plane as her right now. And I think that comes through with, like, okay, and action. You're going to say action? That screws me up. It's, oh, okay, sorry, I'm just used to doing that. Okay, cool. How's that? Well, okay, I don't know, I just can't get through it. Well, do it a little more natural. What's up? We're here to see it. And, like, every time he starts, and he does that one, which is so worse. And he's like, oh, nailed it. Thank you, babe. And you're like, you just came off like the most idiotic amateur, but you felt comfortable because that was you feeling cool.
Yeah, see,
which
I
is what that whole trip is about.
It's
so, like, he's a loosely held bundle of insecurities.
Yeah, he's a total toolbox and she's a total bitch.
But I don't think there's any, no, see, I feel like he's just a very insecure guy with no malice behind it. And she is someone that just has a different worldview, but likes him despite the different disagreements they have. And that's probably fine when they go to get Chinese food, when they go to see a movie, when they sit around and watch Netflix. But if you have to be forced to deal with one of those major disagreements philosophically, you know, like, I've got religious friends, I've got friends that literally believe in fairies and shit, and, you know, when that comes up, it's going, not really my thing.
Yeah.
And they know better than to push me on it, because if they want to, I will sit there and go point by point and go, well, here's why, if you want to talk about it. But we have to talk about it in a way where you go, I still like you as a person, but I'm not, I respect you, I don't respect your beliefs. There's no reason to respect a belief, there's only a reason to respect a person.
God, now I want Oberon's witnesses to come knocking at people's doors. Like, have you heard about our, have you heard the good news about Our Lady Titania?
They were stuck in a relationship where they were stuck in a point where their relationship couldn't overcome the fact that they could only deal with one of their sticking points.
I think that what they actually are two not very good actors trying to deal with not having very much of a script. Huh. Because this all seemed kind of improv.
Well, I'm sure it's probably heavily
like, so. I guess I don't know, but
I know that they wanted to establish that he's really shitty at making his little movie, but they spend 45 minutes demonstrating how shitty he is at interviewing people and doing the one-shots. There's just like, I get it. This interview is super awkward because he's really bad at this and the people aren't that interesting. So let's do that four more times before we actually go to the forest and run into fucking Hillbilly Harbinger.
See, what I thought was interesting about that, and that kept me engaged, and Charlie, let me know if this is where you fall on it, too. But because I liked the couple, I was okay with watching just more of their interaction, and I really enjoyed the fact that, again, because he's the guy that no matter what happens, he's going to keep believing. And you watch him just continuously get shot down by locals in Bigfoot capital of the world, going, no, of course not, dude.
Yeah.
And he's still like, and then, you know, like, what? And they're like, no. No. He's like, oh. And then they finally get to that one guy who's very clearly at the bookstore or whatever, who's just very clearly interested in keeping the legend alive because that's how he keeps his business.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the first sincere moment of any kind of weird tension is redneck potential pot grower guy who's played by, what, Bucky Sinister, right?
Oh, it's, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
I think it is, yeah, which is a cool pull. But that scene to me was like that. I had my blood boiling and my heart pounding because it's got that over the top machismo that in real life, when someone comes up and fronts that way to me, I'm not a violent guy. I don't confront people. So I would do exactly what he did and just have my heart pounding. My face would be red. You know, I wouldn't be able to hear because all the blood rushes up into your ears, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was watching that sitting on my couch. I was just seething on his behalf of like watching this dickhead just show up and just like, look at my big swinging dick. And I was like, ugh, it's driving me fucking nuts. And I was like, that was a great scene to me. Like, yeah, it's redneck asshole, but I thought it was very well played. And like, especially just the little slap on the chest as the guy walks away. I was like, oh my God, that is so over the top as a fuck you to somebody that you're trying to make emasculated in front of someone. That I loved that scene because it made me so angry.
It requires an investment that I didn't have.
That may be. Did you have the same kind of investment, Charlie, where like you were okay with watching the interviews?
Well, the only time early on or at any point towards until you get to the tail end of it was that like the one part that it was more sad than it was dread, but when he does the interview with the older fella, the ranger guy or whatever, and he's talking about the thing with his dog and that whole deal. And it's like, you know, it's weird. It's like when somebody tells a story, like, you know, and we've all had this happen at one point or other where somebody will tell you a story, like a personal anecdote. And they just sort of like, maybe they had a couple of drinks or whatever. And they just like let slip with something. They're like, whoops. You know, like it just sort of like, it's a little bit more data than you needed to know. Like, yeah, the great aunt Ethel is actually into, you know, fist fucking elephants or whatever. Like that was not something that I needed to know over dinner, but like they just let it slip. Those were the first words, by the way, that just came into my head. So I combined them in a sentence. That was a bit of verbal jujitsu.
Sure
that, anyway. But so like in that scene, it's like, it's very sad. It's very sad. And then you're like, but he is indicating without a shadow of a doubt that like something happened to his dog. And it's something that it was very like, and it's this very long, drawn out, kind of dull way of telling the story. But there's that little glimmer of like, he's telling you that there is this thing that occurred. And it's like, we don't really know what it is necessarily. And that kind of made me a little necky, hairy prickly kind of thing a little bit. Also, Matt, you touched on this a long time ago, and you talked about this where when we watch films where you get interpersonal stuff where people are like, Thanksgiving dinner, like, fuck you, yeah, fuck you, and your mashed potatoes, blah, 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 blah. And it's like this really uncomfortable social situation, and that really makes you kind of pucker up a bit.
Yep.
The scene, like, when they are, after they've been out in the forest for a bit, or they're heading out the way, and it's like, initially it's got a lot of novelty, and then after a while it wears thin, and it's not novel any longer, and it's annoying because it's hot, and you don't have your shit, and then blah, 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 blah. And, like, so the playful teasing becomes, like, you know, kind of like a little bit sharper and a little bit meaner. And it's like, and that was the one that really kind of jangled my nerves, not because I was scared or nervous about the potential Bigfoot thing. It was just the tension, or listening to the tension between the two of them. It was just like, oh, I know how that is. Like, I know that thing.
Yeah, it's that didn't get enough sleep. It's a little too hot out. The air conditioner's not working.
Yeah.
And you're saying the same thing that if you were both comfortable and well-rested is a joke. And
yeah,
you both laugh, but then you go, what's that supposed to mean? You're like, what? I'm just joking. You don't seem like it. I totally am. I'm totally joking right now.
You're like, exactly. No, yeah, you're right there, right on the money.
Like, you realize you can hear yourself yelling, going, I'm not yelling. I did literally mean that as a joke. I mean the words I'm saying, but I'm not saying them the way I mean them.
You're right.
I don't know what's going on. It's just like your shit just gets lost. And I think that does happen over the course of this.
And then they kick the map in the creek.
As shorthand, they kick the map in the creek. So they end up spending the night where they wake up with the camera on, and this is going to be the part that I think you probably hated the most, I'm guessing.
Yeah, okay, so we start off with, of our hour and a half, hour 20 minutes of runtime.
Give or take, yeah.
We get 40 solid minutes of just the shitty interviews and the bickering.
Yes. 40, maybe 45.
Yeah. And then we end up with, I swear to God, 10 minutes of the same shot where they just sit there and listen.
I think you're absolutely right. It's at least
10 minutes. I think it's very close to 20, actually.
Awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was hard. I thought that was harrowing and perfect.
Oh, my God.
I thought the sound on that was great, and I loved it.
Occasionally, somebody comes and, like, fucking whacks the tent.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes,
But again, that's all just, like you said, if you weren't invested, that would be the worst thing ever.
It is, like, so seriously, how the fuck long are we going to watch these two people sit and do nothing? Did I accidentally pause the video?
And see, because I was invested, to me, I was just there every second of it, watching it with them.
I have a theory about this. Yeah. And I've talked to a couple of people. I've talked to one fella who is a writer that I really respect, and he really loved this movie. He thought it was great. And in the same conversation, around the same table, talked to another fellow that I really like, I really respect, who just, like, kicking the wall, hated it. And what was interesting was, and they both said kind of the same thing, and I'm curious what you all think about this, which is that, like, Josh, the tent scene really grated on you. Matt, you thought it was very harrowing with the sounds, the little things, and what the hell's going on. And so, but the point that they were making, and this is what I wanted to ask you, was if you didn't know going into this movie that it was Bigfoot themed, if instead of on the poster of the, you know, that really neat, it's a beautiful illustration, it really is.
Really great.
No, it's
poster.
A beautiful illustration, but if you didn't know that awesome. Going in, if it was like, Willow Creek and, like, shit happens in the forest, be there, you know, whatever, and that's it. And they didn't say, like, and they didn't have, like, that beautiful illustration of all the skulls on the Bigfoot or whatever, all that kind of jazz. If you didn't know it was Bigfoot, I wonder if that would change your feel for how that scene went. Because to me, it kind of hit in the pudding middle sort of area. Like, it didn't hit, like, heavy, it didn't non, you know? But I'm just wondering,
I don't think it mattered to me. I think if I just knew I was going to see a scary movie in the woods and then weird shit like that starts happening in the woods, and maybe I've just spent enough time in a tent in the woods and living next to the woods as a kid, that the woods are fucking terrifying.
No, Blair Witch scared the shit out of me.
Me too. And, you know, and like I said, and when, at the time I saw that, I was still living in shock at my parents' house where we had 2.5 acres of forest around our house. So getting out of the car was like I had to steel myself to go do that because it's terrifying, you know? And so I've been in the woods at night, either alone or with people, and all you have to hear is that one weird sound, and you are instantly caveman without a fire, and you are undone. And so, like, to me, that just hits it for me. It doesn't take a lot to freak me out with people as vulnerable as someone is in a tent in the middle of the woods.
And you cared about them.
But again, I think that's more about it, the investment. It's not necessarily
I was so rooting for these fuckheads to get murdered. And the fact that they delayed Fuckhead Murder until almost the credits rolling was obnoxious to me. But like, even if it's not Bigfoot or whatever, it's Blair Witch. It's Blair Witch with nothing else added to it. It's just Blair Witch again. Just dude sitting in a tent with, you know, very mild shit. It's like Blair Witch dialed down a little bit.
Oh, see, I took it as like, Blair Witch with the fat trim.
There is, well, like when they're sitting in that tent, it's just like occasionally when Bigfoot can be arsed to do something, mm-hmm. so like a tiny creepy thing happens. It's just like, not only is this shit that I've seen before, it's a not as good version of the scene.
And see, I thought this was a refined, honed version of that. Ugh. Whereas in Blair Witch, you have so much hiking and so much nothing happening, and then you have those couple of harrowing moments at night. Here, you have a lot of hanging out, a lot of things where you actually had characters at least I liked. So yeah. You have to assume like you like the characters sure. in Blair Witch. And then instead of huge swaths of thing, and then like you see a stick, and then a huge swath of nothing, and you see a rock. And then you finally have that night in the tent where it's like in Blair Witch. And you're like, what the shit? And that's like the scariest thing ever.
Yeah.
Here they said, what if we just made one big night of everything happening? And that's why you have this like 20-minute scene of all the scares in Blair Witch condensed down to 20 minutes, which I found is much more refined and efficient.
But there's barely anything happening.
But that's the whole point, though, because like I was invested.
The,
it didn't
hearing
have
the
to.
Noises in the distance.
Oh, see, I was leaning
just,
in towards
nothing.
Oh, I was leaning in, listening hard to hear what the next sound would be and if it would be closer or which side it would be on. Like, yeah. I was totally just invested in the terror of if I was in a tent hearing weird sounds. And, like, they drew me in. So, but again, I think it's either gets you or doesn't.
Yeah, I was just so aware of there being, like, of this being a film in a weird way. And, like, it's a film. If you want, you could make this better. Because this is not a documentary. You're not tied to, like, some series of events that happened. You could have gone with something else than these two fuckheads sitting in their goddamn tent, cocking their ear and listening real hard. I was God damn it, I just spent 20 minutes watching people listen.
Yeah. But, like, I had my heart racing for that 20
minutes.
And,
like, she went up, she got out to pee, and like, oh, I saw a thing. Oh, it's a fucking raccoon. Like, okay, fine.
Raccoon's scary, man.
He's like, hey, will you marry me? No. Oh, well, that's awkward. Should we just go live in L.A.? Okay. Should we just sit here and listen for a while?
See, yeah. Okay, here's a,
there's two of them now.
I don't want to...
One of them threw a rock.
I don't know what I don't want to do. You guys mentioned the thing with Blair Witch, and I do feel it's important to bring up that not everybody in the world is unnerved by that movie. Somebody like yours truly, when the harrowing last scene happened in the movie, I thought he was taking a pee in the corner of the room, and I was very confused when the credits started rolling.
Sure.
I was completely unaffected by that movie by any stretch of the imagination, and I just I've been baffled for, 15 years now, about how people are unnerved by that movie. However,
well, I should point out that when we use Blair Witch as shorthand, I mean as a movie that scared us.
Oh, sure. Well, that's here's the thing though. I am totally cool with like the fact that does get people. And I realize, Matt, when you said something a minute ago about the tent thing being on tents, that may be one of the reasons. It's like I hate the outdoors. I don't like nature. Nature fucking sucks. Like, nature does not have outlets or air conditioning or ceilings or beds.
Yeah, I would say all of civilization was based on defeating nature.
That's what I'm saying.
Pretty happy.
Yeah, that's just like, so I just say fuck nature, fuck tents, go to a hotel. But that might be part of it too. Like, if you spend more time out there doing camping, different kinds of things, that will speak to you differently than somebody like me who just does not. I like to go to nature and come back from it before sundown. So it's just like different strokes.
It's a great
you know?
Man
but
once
like,
said, never go somewhere.
Yeah, those
type of
things can speak
matter.
To people different ways, you know. So it's sort of like, but I've always been amazed with people with Blair Witch. It's always amazed me. Like people are just like, oh my god, it's so scary. It's like, okay.
Well,
it just made me kind of nauseous.
I think,
and bored.
No, but I think you're right because like minimalist horror movies, which are often found footage type movies, I think a lot of whether or not they work is entirely based on what you bring to the movie. You know, like, for me, this hits buttons that I would have. You know, like, the woods at night, alone, weird sounds, shit like that. Like, that's the kind of shit that keeps me up at night in my apartment.
Yeah.
If I wake, because I always wake up at least once or twice in the middle of the night just because I sleep like shit. And if I hear just the wrong sound, literally last night, woke up at 5 a.m. for no reason and was like, god damn it, I got like 3 more hours before I have to get up. was laying there. He's like, fuck. And then heard the weird sound and went, oh, it's the thing from Lights Out. And then sweat. I laid in bed. Laid in bed sweating for 20 minutes before I fell asleep again because my brain hates me.
I just like, so, oh, it's the thing from Lights Out. Yep, yep, yep.
That is the new my brain has just gone, oh, this is so much easier than thinking of creepy things. Yeah. I can just go, it's that thing from Lights Out, and you stay awake forever. Play with me. And it's just like, you don't need sleep. Stay awake and think of things. You know, there was the Doug Stanhope line. Something's got to rhyme with orange. Let's think. And it's that is exactly what happens. Now, as I wake up, I hear a weird sound. I assume it's the thing from Lights Out, and I don't sleep for another 20 minutes.
Okay.
And then I fall asleep and wake up in the morning, and I go, nah, I can get out of bed now. It should be safe.
Like, I'm pretty sure that that's not the thing.
It's probably mine, but I still, like, do the glance down the hallway. And I'm a grown-ass man. I'm 35, and I don't believe in ghosts or anything supernatural. But I do believe in just the reptile part of my brain getting freaked out and getting that chill up your spine. And this movie hit that.
By the way, I understand that why they keep the camera rolling for a while. And I do understand that on a meta level, if they stop the camera rolling, then there's no movie.
Sure.
However, oh my god, we're so scared that Bigfoot is going to find us. What should we do? Well, keep the light on that camera and scream a lot.
Yeah. And I had that same thought while watching.
And that happens for the entire last third of the movie. And I was just like, could she not just shut the fuck up? Wouldn't she shut the fuck up?
Have you ever been around someone that's super terrified? They don't always remain silent, even if that would be the best possible thing.
I really felt like both of them would be better served.
Oh, I think he
shutting the fuck up.
He did that though. Like, he was the guy who's like, he was shitting himself and said nothing. And she honestly was doing the same thing because it was smarter to remain quiet. But if something got too close or hit the tent, she'd shriek. Which I feel like,
is super annoying.
It's not tactically smart, but I feel like it's not unrealistic. Like, there are plenty of people who will just shriek if they're freaked out to a certain degree.
Well, like, when they're out running around, and then they, like, hole up in a tree or some shit. And, like, I feel like now would be the time to turn the light off on that fucking camera.
Right. But, I mean, they do turn the light off in the tent for a while.
Yeah.
Until something is right outside the tent and makes a noise and it freaks them out and they turn it on. Which, again, I sat there watching that scene going, would I turn the light off or not? Because I'm tactically smarter to turn the light off, obviously. But at the same time, this thing's already snuffling around your tent. And then, want to be able to see what's happening or not? The big weakness there to me is that we're watching them, as opposed to watching the door of the tent the whole time. Which to me is the more logical thing to be filming. Yeah. You'd be pointing the light away from you.
Yeah, but pointing the light directly in your face is when you're trying to see what's up.
Yeah, so that to me, I was just like, well, it's a movie.
And it's like, we don't want to interrupt our beautiful shot of the two dipshits listening. So, like, we have to make sure that runs.
So I accept that they're filming the wrong thing in their fright, but I'm not necessarily against the idea that you'd want a light on, because we do associate light with safety.
Sure.
So I get it. It's a little weak. It's not tactically brilliant, but I can kind of see how you do that.
I will give you there are two things that I'll give you on this movie. When there are like two or three calls at once, kind of creepy.
We should talk about that real quick. Just the sound that the big feet make.
Creepy.
I was actually impressed with how restrained that was. It's really not even something a person can't do. It's just weird. And out of context.
It sounds human, but there's no reason why a human would be doing that.
Yeah. And honestly, and just the fact that it sounds like it's really loud and far away, so unless you're like an opera singer, that wouldn't carry that way. The resonance is maybe the weird part. But yeah, it's just like, I like that they really seem to kind of underplay that, which again, and we'll talk about this in just a second, leads to the ending of the film, which is where this whole time we've been led to believe there could be a Bigfoot or big feet. I don't know, Bigfoots. I don't know what the plural on Bigfoot is.
Moose.
Moose. Thank you. or this could be pot farmers using the Bigfoot rumors to keep people from bumping into their shit. So blur. And, you know, I went online and looked at various message boards and whatnot. But, and there's plenty of people that are like, okay, so what does the ending mean? Was it Bigfoot? Was it crazy rednecks? Was it pot farmers? What was it? I think I land on Bigfoot, but I don't know that that has to be the interpretation to take that. I've not seen what, like, Bobcat has said, as far as if he said, no, it's totally a Bigfoot movie, and it is actually Bigfoot at the end. Do you know Charlie, if he's come down?
I'm trying to remember, because I remember reading a couple of different things where he's talked about it. I mean, he's a little, generally speaking, I think he's kind of a little cagey, not like to play games, but I think exactly. He's a little, you know, kind of like we made it as this sort of a theme or this kind of idea. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know definitively. I think, I really think, just listening to, especially with, cause I'm kind of more spiritual in to some degree. I'm like, I'm kind of not super invested in it, but I'm not like, kind of like rage boner. So it's sort of like, I'm kind of in the middle of somewhere. And it's interesting to listen to the both of you kind of describe it, because like, it really does come down to whether or not, like, are you in on it or not? And like, if you were in on it, that last scene, it's got to be like, oh god, nerves. And then if like, you're not, it's like, god, but this fucking end already. So it's sort of like, I can just see where this has got that, like, it's either going to be one way or the other way. It's going to be over here or over here, you know?
So, yeah, so at the end of our film, we get, they're running around, they pause for a second, they're kind of panting, and one of them's like, oh my god, and you turn and you see legs. And they pan up, and you see underwear, and I go, that's weird. And then you see it's a woman wearing only underwear, standing there covered in kind of dirt and shit. And it's the woman who was on the missing poster from the diner where they had the Bigfoot burgers earlier, where they're like, oh, we should figure out what your picture would be for your missing poster. And then something grabs the dude. They both are screaming. Duder, you know, the camera's laying there filming the ground. Duder makes a bunch of sounds of dying. And then you have...
Sort of.
Then you have, at some point, way off in the distance, because it gets dragged for a ways, Chicky making a bunch of really crazy screams, and then multiple, quote-unquote, Bigfoot moans all kind of happen. And so, you never see a Bigfoot.
Right.
So,
sure don't.
Thus the... And honestly, I went into this expecting I wouldn't.
Mm.
But, you know, thus the discussion on the interwebs of what did I just see? And I literally, guys, I'm watching it going, I honestly don't know what happened. I don't know what I'm supposed to think of this. And, you know, from going online and looking around, it's like I said, it comes down to generally either crazy redneck pot farmers or Bigfoot. Either one seems to have an element of sex slavery in it.
Yeah, or possibly both.
Or both, for that matter. Yeah. So, like, I tend to land on, just because I like the creepiness and weirdness of it, and there's enough strange sounds around the tent and that weird moaning howl, that I lean towards the idea that, you know, yeah, it is, there's a Bigfoot or a small group or clan of big feet.
Right.
I'm sorry, moose. You know, if you get into their territory at the wrong time or whatever, they kill the males because they're useless to them and then keep the females for breeding purposes, basically, which is where this missing woman is involved, where she's out there in the woods where they've just kind of got her and she's just all fucking numb and basically just a zombie at this point. And, yeah, so the guy gets dragged away and savaged and you hear the woman start screaming and you have to kind of fill in the horrifying blanks there yourself. And that's just kind of it.
I don't think if it's supposed to be humans, I don't think it gets dragged that fast.
Exactly. I think that's part of it. And
although what I said was, now he's getting dragged behind a motorcycle while he gargles? Because the whole death thing, it just really sounds like someone who has never done any voice acting before, and they're like, okay, this is going to be the big death scene for this movie that we haven't filmed yet. So go ahead and give it to such a guy. She's like, Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I think to me
there's no currency here, so I just like...
Sure.
Anything that sucks is just gonna get ripped up.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole getting dragged thing. Like, unless that creature is 10 feet tall,
which...
With giant legs, it's way too fast. And
but
it's
I mean,
way
I
too smooth. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
But I mean, if it's a camera hung on a strap from a guy's wrist getting dragged on the grass, and yeah, I do picture Bigfoot being taller than me. Do you not?
I just figure his feet are big, and that's all.
Oh, see, I always assume that they're kind of proportionate. So, like, yeah, like, as
a what if they were, like, 4 feet tall?
That'd be fucking weird.
Big feet.
You know, it could be. I mean,
they don't call him tall guy. They call him Bigfoot.
Oh, you're right. Weird.
Tall guy.
Hey
there, big fella.
Reckon there's a tall guy.
But no, I guess I always assume that they are taller than even your abnormally tall.
Well, we've all seen the award-winning documentary Harry the Henderson, so that's kind of what we're working off of.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I guess, as a 6 foot tall man, I expect that if I ever bumped into a Bigfoot, I would have to look up at it to a great degree. It'd be like running into Shaq in the forest. You know?
See, you're just tantalizing me with better movies.
Right.
Harry and the Hendersons and running into Shaq in the forest. John Lithgow could have elevated this a little bit.
So, yeah, I mean, I assume this is an incredibly large creature that moves quickly. I mean, you know, the same way that, like, a buffalo hauls ass despite being this huge tank of a thing for, like, a short little sprint. So I took it as kind of being that. But that's the thing, like again, because that's the kind of thing that, you're right, a person can't do that. And so that, to me, lends credence to the idea that it's something other than a person. And since there's no motor sounds, which would also explain that, it's not someone using a vehicle. Plus, that seems a weird way to do it. Whereas, you know, people coordinate and talk and blah, blah, blah. And at this point, you've got them out in the middle of nowhere. You don't need to keep up the Bigfoot thing. The Bigfoot thing is to keep people from going in there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
At the point where you're at to kill them, you can just kill them. And you have when they find the, you know, the footprints around the creek bed and then, like, the bushes, like, and shake. There's no need to do that. Just shoot them. So, like, a lot of what happens there doesn't have to happen if it's just dudes with guns. It only has to happen if it's an actual creature that they're running from. And plus, it's a more fun explanation in a horror movie.
And the problem is, if it is Bigfoot, then your movie is a really straight line from A to B. Whereas, like, don't go into the woods or you're going to get killed by Bigfoot. Oh, you went into the woods. You got killed by Bigfoot. Credits.
Isn't that Dracula?
Don't
go to Castle Dracula because you get killed by Dracula.
But he didn't get killed by Dracula. Dracula came back to London and there was this whole thing.
Jesus
Christ. Keanu Reeves was there.
But I mean, don't wake the mummy or the mummy will kill you. Like, I mean, that most horror movies, don't go to Camp Crystal Lake because Jason will kill you. They go there and they get killed.
Yeah, in creative ways, though. What I'm trying to say,
but like
is
I'm saying,
there's nothing going on in this movie.
That seems a weak argument of don't do this thing or you'll die. I feel like many horror movies exist on the idea of don't read from the Necronomicon or the Deadites will kill you. Oh,
yeah,
as advertised.
What I'm talking about, there's not a hint of a swerve.
Oh, see, I felt like it was right up till the end. Like I said, I had to look online to make up my mind about what I think happened.
Yeah, if I had given enough fucks, I might have investigated further, but it was just like, this seems to very clearly be just a straight up Bigfoot is out there, and I guess dipshit number one was right the whole time, so.
Which, again, as a skeptic, is infuriating on one level, but as a horror movie, that's cool.
But it was so much more interesting if there had been some angle at all, instead of just like, yeah, there really is a Bigfoot and he killed him.
One last thought here. What did you think of the song about Roger and Bob?
Fucking terrible.
Those scenes are so awkward. With one of the... Like, they really gave me... The reason why I ask is, like, they gave me that kind of twittery, butterfly-ish kind of, like, thing of, like, I can't deal with embarrassment real well, especially, like, on film. Yep. Like, this is, like, an awkward situation. I just go, ah! Like, stab me in the eye.
Yeah, I can't watch...
Chop, like, something pointy.
Yeah, I can't watch hidden camera shows because I don't think it's funny to watch someone make a fool of themselves. It makes me uncomfortable.
It's weird, yeah. It's just like, and so, like, when that guy was singing it, so, like, it just really gave me that kind of, like, that same thing of, like, I don't know if this is supposed to be funny or if we're laughing at him or what, but.
Yeah, and I just feel horrible for the guy. Yeah.
But I think those are the moments where the Goldthwait comes out, I think.
Release the Goldthwait.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't give a shit about, I feel like, the horror genre or anything, but, it, like, his wheelhouse is that kind of keeping you off balance a little bit with the awkwardness, and I think he just does it too well for me in this movie, where it's like, this is just how awkward people are on a day-to-day basis, and I'm going to reproduce it so faithfully that it's almost like this is a found artifact and not created. And like, you did a really good job at that, but that was a really shitty, like, use of your time, man.
Yeah. I don't know. We should wrap on this one. This went way longer than I expected discussion to go. Like I said, this worked for me. I liked it.
So confused.
I think I totally get why you don't, Josh, because like you said, it's like anything else. Like, you know, I can't like plenty of movies because like, rom-coms and other shit where people are like, oh my god, you gotta watch this. And I watched 10 minutes of it and I go, these people are all assholes. And they're like, yeah, but the movie's really good. I'm like, but I can't enjoy the parts you like about this movie because I hate these characters. This is not going to work. You know, so I totally get that, where it's like, you know what? You could, as good as everything else might be, if you don't care about the people going through the motions, they could be doing the finest dance ever, and it's just not going to work. So I get why that works. I didn't hate these people. I felt frustrated with them sometimes, but they were realistic frustrations. And again, it might be because I'm so heavily invested in the skeptic community that watching these two have the intellectual disagreements about the reality of the situation and whatnot as the thing went on, I was sitting there going, rooting for her to make good, cogent points, but to do that respectfully. And watching him do all the pitfalls of the true believer and being like, okay, I can rebut that argument. And I was doing it as like an intellectual exercise myself, just watching, being like, oh god, buddy, really? That's what you're going with? Like, that's so easy to discredit. And then like, but watch, I enjoyed watching her kind of gently change the subject until he pushes her, until she can't just keep diverting from that fact. So I liked them, therefore I cared about them. Like I said, the scene in the tent totally worked for me because I loved the sound design on that. And I think that might just be, tents in the woods freak me out. And then
you are tense in the woods yourself.
I am. Yeah. I don't know about, if you've ever been to Fest, it's a lot of fucking intense.
Heyo.
Try the view.
Yes. And then just, that last little couple minutes there, I thought was really fun to watch and done well and left me going, what the shit? And not in the bad way of like, what the fuck just happened? I don't know what I just saw, but as in like, what the fuck just happened? Don't know what I just saw. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, one of them has you intellectually curious and wanting to learn more and then realizing you have to make your own conclusions. And the other one makes you go, I don't think they ended this movie. And I was definitely the former, where I was just like, oh god damn it, what other people think about this? Cause I'm formulating my own theories. So, I enjoyed the shit out of this. It is not like the best movie we've ever seen, but especially for found footage, I really like this. So I'm going to go like a 7. Out of 10, 7 out of 10, Bigfoot handjobs.
All right, Charlie, you want to hit it next?
I'm just going to kind of stay at the Switzerland sort of area, so I'm going to go 5 out of 10, shakes the Sasquatches.
Nice.
My notes for this are full of profanity. Like, seriously, like, let's see, where did it start? Oh, shitty couple has botched marriage proposal. These two fucks better get murdered soon. How the fuck long are we going to watch these people sit and do nothing? 5 minutes of them fucking sitting there in that static shot. Bob, why? Something happened. Stop the fucking presses. Could she not just shut the fuck up? Oh, no, they're lost and wandering. Now it's fucking dark again? I fucked up, though, is the shortest version of the Blair Witch speech I've ever heard. His whole, like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Yeah. It's just, I fucked up. By the end of it, it's like, this is just Blair Witch by somebody who hasn't seen Blair Witch and doesn't know that it already exists. To me, it felt like somebody who was trying their hand at horror for the first time, almost in a condescending way, or in a just complete novice way, where I haven't made any horror movies, but I know what they're like, and I have this great idea, I'm going to send these guys out into the woods and shake their tent. And, like, either you haven't seen Blair Witch, and or any found footage, and you don't know that this is just kind of standard for how these things go, or you don't care that this is, that you're not fucking bringing anything to the table. So, like, I'm disappointed in my man Bobcat. Just 1.5 out of 10, listening really hard. For a minute there, I thought you put 2.5. You're like, oh, man, no. I believe you'll find it's 1.5, my good friend. Let's take a quick break because we're running hella long, and we'll come back and jizz on witching and bitching for a little bit. Wow. Be right back. So finally we got witching and bitching, or brujando y perrando, or, you know, probably just las brujas de cigarro.
Or just a bucket load of awesomeness.
Yeah, there's witches, and...
there's a lot of bitching.
Oh, man, when this starts. Like, they have the whole tarot card sequence leading into the bank... The bank heist sequence would be fine no matter what movie it was attached to.
Yeah, this thing is, that's like Guy Ritchie bank heist.
Really fantastically done.
We should point out, too, real quick, I was waiting for Netflix to load on my laptop, and you know how now Netflix is super annoying because they assume you don't want to see the things you want to see. You want to see the things they want to show you. So when you open it up on your interwebs, it just has like a big banner ad for some fucking movie, and it's almost never something you give a fuck about.
Yeah.
And it loaded up, except that my internet connection was running slow, so it timed out. So it loaded the text for everything, but none of the pictures.
Hmm.
And so I had just the description that was like, a heist goes wrong, leading to blah, blah, blah. And this thing was like, that sounds fucking awesome. And I reset my internet, and then it pops up and goes, witching and bitching. And I was like, yes, I have to watch that this week anyway. So I was super excited that not even knowing what it was, I had wanted to watch it based on the description. I was like, oh, I'm super excited now. I'm saving that one for last. So I was not disappointed. Yes, yeah, so that made me very happy. And this is streaming on Netflix, as we probably mentioned. And it's very rare that when I go to watch a movie streaming that, you know, they always have like the red stars filled in to see what most people, this one has 5 stars as its average rating. So fortunately, most people seem to be somewhat smart and know exactly how awesome this movie is that they're getting.
Okay, so we got a good, like, you start off with all of the dynamics of a good heist movie and all the visual flair, all the tension and all the pacing is just spot on. And just hilarious.
And the camera work matches that kind of movie.
Yeah.
They really do. They have that, like, frenetic, but not overly, like, nauseating camera work for the heist part.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a bunch of street performers that look like the people that hang out in front of, like, Man's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
You have a SpongeBob, a guy painted like a silver Jesus, you know, army man. And you realize they're all in cahoots, and they're going to rob a gold, one of those, like, we give cash for your gold.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is amazing. I don't know if there's a better word for that, but Jesus with an Uzi is awesome.
Yeah, stored in the cross of all places.
Oh, so good. So
have
fucking
you
good.
Actually, that made me think of it just also almost just start right from the start. Have you guys both seen The Last Circus?
Nope.
No, that was came up recommended, okay. I think, after watching this.
Well, that's his previous movie to, I'm trying to think chronologically. I think it's the one previous to that one. It is like, it is acres of crazy. It's just a ton of, almost too much to take in. Like, there are times when this movie feels like it's like, well, that's a lot, but it's like, it's still fun and really, but The Last Circus is like, it is just the elevator and The Shining opening up with the blood. Like, it's just like,
is it also a horror movie? Would we do it for this one at some point?
I would not, I don't know that I would classify it as a horror movie, to be honest. I would say it's more like a weird, you know, Gilliam kind of influence. I wouldn't describe it as a horror movie. It's a lot of horrific elements to it, but I wouldn't describe it as a horror movie.
Okay.
But it's just shit tons of creativity just like being just unloaded on you. And like this one has that same kind of thing where like here's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, this movie just keeps
so much stuff.
Yeah, this movie just keeps doing more. And I at some point I was like, at some point you guys are gonna run out of money.
Nah.
Like I don't honestly like I don't know how you're getting all this on screen. You know, as I'm watching like the only time I felt like something really suffered budgetarily is relatively early on, the first time Duder gets bit in the arm by the old witch, and you have the really poorly composited CGI blood spray, I was like, oh, this means we might be in for one of those, but that's fine, I'm enjoying the rest of this enough that I'll put up with shitty CGI.
Right.
But then the rest of the movie, I was like, no, they look amazing running around in the ceilings and walls, and like the big creature, like, what the fuck? Like, just that one moment was like terrible, I'm like, is that the last thing you did? And you're like, okay, we got like $8 and a half a Subway. Hey, Joe, you like Cold Cut Combo? Like, dude, we need some blood spray in this shot. fine, I'll do it for as long as it takes me to finish the sandwich. Yeah.
Like, with one hand on the sandwich.
Right.
And,
so, yeah, but it's, I couldn't believe that, like, they kept doing the next thing. And the plot just kept getting bigger and bigger and adding more and more characters and monsters. And just, like, the payoff is alarming.
Because you go from the, like, fully realized heist movie to the, like, all of the guys bickering on the road and their conversation is hilarious.
Yep.
To this, like, it reminded me of
The rhythm is perfect in that scene.
It is very good, yeah.
But then to the fairy tale kind of reminded me of Roald Dahl's The Witches.
Oh my god, that movie is so... Oh,
yeah, that movie.
Scared the fuck out of
me. So it reminded me of that. But then all the way into this Cthuloid thing by the end of it.
Well, it is... They had the actual fertility goddess statue that you see in the opening credits here and that you see in every textbook.
Yeah.
Whenever they talk about cultures that worship fertility goddess, they do that just morbidly obese carvings that you see of just these... You know, it's...
Dude, real goddesses have curves.
Am I right? But no, it's for, this is so unkind. I don't think I should say it. It's basically just a stone carving of Kathy Bates. but with bigger boobies, but you know what I mean? They do like, cause that was the whole idea. Yeah, like the image of fecundity was the obese, woman with huge breasts because that was well nourished and, you know, able to, you know, nourish the offspring or whatever. And you see that carving everywhere. And here they just make that into an actual creature that is, what, 6 stories tall?
Yeah.
And you just watch it walk around the corner and go, are you fucking shitting me? It's like when they open the Rancor pit in Jedi and you're like, what the fuck? Except it's just titties and snatch in this movie. And you're like, someone lovingly put each lock of hair around that ginormous asshole on this crazy creature. Like, that guy earned his money.
So how many movies have we seen where the cult is gonna summon the giant old one that ends all things, and they actually pull it off, and the old one just shows up? Just, to me, that seemed really fresh.
I mean, like,
Cabin in the Woods, you get the hand coming out, but usually it's like, if you're gonna be summoning giant old one dude, you fail, like, they stop him.
Yeah.
So you don't have to put that creature on the screen. And there's like, no.
You get hints of it. Dagon had a little bit of it.
Yeah,
Dagon. That silent, I don't think you did that. That silent Lovecraft short. Yeah. I think you get Cthulhu in it.
By the way, speaking of Dagon, the Sergio's ex-wife is the mermaid lady from Dagon.
Huh.
She also, that's Macarena, that's Macarena Gomez. She is one of the two leads in Shrew's Nest, which is in my, if not my favorite movie this year, in my top 5 this year. It is it is a no-fucking-around kind of a motherfucker of a movie. It's awesome. But it's all same team. Like, Carolina Bang shows up in there. Alex G. Iglesias produced it. But it is, Shrew's Nest is one of my top 5 this year, hands down. But she's in there. Macarena Gomez is in there.
Yeah, I was surprised that she looked familiar, because she has those giant eyeballs that are just a little bit too far apart.
Big eyeballs.
And then they've gotten some bags around them in the intervening year, like 10 years. And so, you know, I was like, she's very, like, otherworldly looking. She's the Starbucks logo from Dagon. That is fantastic. So it's nice to see her. I love just all those bit characters. I feel like they could all have a movie about them. Like, when all the witches are rolling up to the, like, witches, meeting of the witches club. Like, the two men in drag.
Yeah.
Who are obviously,
occurred to me, boys.
Not women, right?
We went from, like, bank heist to, witches coven and the big titty swinging, monster. We kind of missed a part in the middle there.
Well, listen, we're at almost 2 hours of audio at this point, so, I feel like, we don't have to hit every plot point. If there are high notes, you know, just throw them on in. If there are low notes, you just throw them in. Well, I'll be Bigfoot for a little bit. One of my favorite lines at the beginning, by the way, is when they're getting away. They're like, so what do we do now? And this guy, like, I've seen a bunch of movies. We go south to Mexico.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God, that's great.
South to Mexico. And the guy's like, no. We don't. And he goes,
Portugal? It's like, no, we go to France. Like, oh, okay.
Well, they have these running gags. Like, they have the guy whose car they commandeer or whatever else, or the guy, well, I can't remember how he gets, the dude in the trunk.
Taxi driver.
It's like every time they stop, and they go, oh, the dude in the trunk. Like, hey, what am I doing?
And the dude in the trunk was simply the passenger in the cab when they.
That's what it was. I was trying to remember who the.
Yeah, he's just the most hapless motherfucker that has the most horrifying shit happen to him.
Right.
I felt really bad for that guy because they're playing it for laughs. I'm like, they've literally cut all his fingers off and made sandwiches or maybe hush puppies. And,
yeah, and he's just sitting there going,
Yeah, and they just keep, like, they strangle him for a while, they cut his ears off, they cut his fingers off, and they're just beating the fuck out of him. So at the end of the movie, when he's sitting there with everybody else, and he's just like, hey, and I'm like, no, 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 I can see how the rest of you might all kind of get along, but that guy's going to say, fuck y'all, because you tied me up in the trunk, in my underwear, duct taped me and tied me up, and then threw me a sandwich that I could not either reach nor unwrap. Like, what the fuck? Like, that guy's not going to have that great of an opinion of you. But, again, this movie's just fucking balls nutty and off the wall and has fun. So, okay, whatever, it fits.
It says something about how stuffed this movie is that up until this moment I had forgotten the crazy biker witch also has a little brother who lives downstairs who's locked in the dungeon.
Locked in the toilet.
Who's got his skin falling off. Yeah.
Because it's so moist. Yeah, no, that's the eyes that peek up through the toilet. Which, right. By the way, most horrifying part of this movie, being reminded that toilets in other countries are totally different sometimes. Because...
like the whole squatting deal?
Yeah, just the whole, like, pull your pants down and kind of lean a bit.
Yep.
And I'm like, how old are you before you learn not to piss and shit on your own drawers? Because I feel like if I had to go use one of those right now, and I'm not, you know, this isn't me being, like, culturally, blah, about these, like, I don't give a shit, like, whatever. But I just know that I would be bad at that without practicing for a while.
Yeah, and just, not, like, wanting your center of gravity to be right directly straight up and down, which leads to just dropping it right in your drawers.
Like,
usually there's, like, a pull chain or something to hold.
Yeah, exactly. If there's a thing like that, makes more sense. But I was just like, these people just seem to be fine with just, like, dropping trowel and then just kind of leaning and being like, I'm confident everything here will end up as it should. And that's more credit than I'd give my pooping abilities.
Yeah. Well, for a number one, you enjoy being a dude. And you just point and click.
For the most part.
I forgot the little kid in the oven, who is then, like, sunburnt for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he's got, like, this, like, George Hamilton sort of glaze about him.
George Hamilton glaze.
And we gotta say, if we're gonna fault this movie for anything, it's that this is all very light. Right?
Oh,
you're not like, oh my god, they almost killed that kid. You're like, and the kid's just in the oven kind of going, well, it's a living, you know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nobody is in, it's kind of weightless, which is fine because it means they can just take these giant flights of fantasy without.
Yeah, I mean, it lets them go all splatstick. I mean, they show up at the fucking little rest stop that the witches run, and they order three bowls of soup, and the one guy sees the witch putting a fucking foot into a thing in the kitchen, and she's like, whoop, and he kind of goes, and looks at his soup, and then they were like, we're just gonna go.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it. And then later on, like, the ex-wife comes up looking for him. Yep, just walks out holding an arm. Whoop, didn't realize someone was here. By the way, I can't remember the dude's name now. The duder with the incredible level of strabismus.
Oh, the Marty Feldman?
Yeah. Oh my god, character. I love that man.
He is just like Mexican Marty Feldman. It's fantastic. Or Spanish, sorry.
And it is so fucking funny. Like, that guy just bounces around doing silly shit.
Well, and his lines are so nonsensical. They're just like, just super weird.
He's either quoting that weird ventriloquist or occasionally giving actual cogent sage-like advice.
Yeah.
Because it's like, just say yes to whatever they say. It'll go easier for you. And they're like, what? And he's like, derp a derp a derp. And off he goes. And it's like, that's actually very true advice. And then, like, when he knocks on the door, he's like, give me a smoke and I'll tell you what's up. And she's like, huh? And he's like, never mind. And off he goes. And then when the little kid is playing and he finds that weird, like, New Orleans float out back and jumps through the mouth and comes out the ass, he's like, yep, that's how it goes. Seems weird the first time. And the kid's like, what? And it's like, oh my god, that's just the foreshadowing for the ending of the movie.
I didn't make that connection until just now.
That's like, that guy he's dropping science on every single person that walks up. But it's like one thing out of 50. And so everybody writes him off, like, what do you,
he's cooking fucking credit cards in a cast iron skillet when they show up.
And keys.
The keys is amazing.
And he's adding salt. Yeah, and then they chase him off, and he's just like, oh, and he grabs him, like, what are you doing? He's like, grape juice. like, what the shit?
You're right that it is light. Although I would say that the scene when we don't know at the time is Eva's brother down there in the toilet, like that when you see the eyeball the first time around, like shamanic, that freaked me out.
Yeah,
and
no,
later on when they're running
thing.
Away from, when they're. When they're running away from the herd of witches or whatever else, and like through the house and through that sequence as well. One thing that was distracting was like, God damn, the production design on this is amazing. But then after there's a couple of shots where like there are two other dudes that get bound to the crosses with the dunce caps later on. Like those two dudes, like they're like, okay, we got it. We're good. And then like he's flashing his flashlight around and you can tell that you're looking in the backs of people's heads, but they're not piecing that together. And then he like goes back again with the light and it's like, and you have like all the faces looking at him. Like that one, that gives me the heebie jeebies.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
There are moments. By the way, the cops also do the, well, we're all about to die, fuck it, I'm gay.
I'm gay, yeah. Although that pays off better in this movie, I think.
Yeah, where they're just like, buddy, don't be ashamed.
Because, yeah, and they also, cool. they foreshadow that a bit in the arguments they have as they're driving around. We have to address this because it's kind of, the whole thing where I was like, this is such a silly movie. But there's this weird thing that keeps sticking my craw a little bit, which is that, like, Scully, you've definitely talked about at least a couple of movies we watched as being like, so the idea here is that, like, all men are bad or women are shitty.
Yeah.
This entire movie is every male character shitting on the idea of women as a sex.
Like, yeah, and then at the end, all of the women are evil.
Yeah, like, this is, like, amazingly
misogynistic.
And yet...
And yet these dudes are such goofballs.
But they're so dumb, and here's why I bring it up, because like, I think you have to address that, because watching this movie, I thought about it constantly, like, I can't tell if I have to hate these guys or not.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that some female viewers might just be like, nah, I can't get into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear, you know, post on our Facebook when we post this episode, let us know in the comments, because I'd love to hear the perspective. My take on it was, there's a ton of fun in this movie, and the women we're watching be evil are literally evil. They are witches. You know, like that they are basically just minor, lesser demons. But it's also kind of that theory, I think we've talked about this, the idea that, like, if the dumbass character says it, then you're saying it to show that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like all of our leads are such dumbasses that when they complain about women... they're idiots complaining about women because they don't understand women and because they don't treat women correctly and, you know, like, as people.
Yeah.
They all talk, because whenever they complain about women, they're complaining about how they want this or that, and so you have to do this or that, like they're playing a game of chess and you're trying to win, as opposed to going, what if we related to them as thinking human beings? And instead of trying to manipulate them to get the result we want, we just were in a relationship. And I think I can interpret this movie that way.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure yet.
And that's part of the culture in, like, Hispanic culture is really macho-centric. It's in Spain, and it's historically Spain.
That's Spanish culture. Hispanic is Latin America.
You're so adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, I could just kiss him. Spanish culture and Hispanic culture. But the idea of the machismo?
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes sense that these dudes are used to seeing women as either she's your mother and she's a saint, or she's making your life miserable, but you gotta get that pussy.
Yep.
So I think it makes sense for those dudes to be talking that way, and I don't think any of them are being held up as an example for us to follow, really.
I don't think so.
It's a shame that crazy biker chick has that, like, stereotypical argument with him where he's like, you're overreacting, and she's like levitating. It's like, that gets
that's
into
what makes it funny, though.
It is, exactly. That is the thing, is it's that argument taken to an absurd extreme, which makes me think that's the point.
Oh, I absolutely think that's the point.
I didn't get, like, a misogynistic vibe really off of it. Like, when it's just the guys talking, you get kind of like, you know, maybe they are telling us what the director thinks, but then, you know, and then like,
oh no, I don't think so. No, I wasn't really telling you. I couldn't tell if you guys were going down that road. I don't think so at all. I don't think Iglesias got a bone in his body that's that way. I think part of the way that these guys, these bumble dicks, in the whole first part of this movie is like, look at how stupid, look at how stupid this machismo, BS guy, all these guy-centric things are. Look at how dumb that is. And what makes it even funnier is, then you get into all the witch characters, like the sexual aspect of the thing about Eros, these old women and all this kind of stuff and all that crazy aspect of Eros. Like, it just amps these things up to the point where, like, it all becomes absurd. And to me, that's part of his point, is that, like, look at how dumb that is. Isn't that goofy, where we can just pee on its shoes because that's the amount of respect that it deserves? And that, to me, is his point. I don't think there's a second in this movie that would suggest otherwise.
And I think that's where I come down on it. You know, I literally finished this movie 20 minutes before we started recording, so I haven't had a lot of time to digest it. Mm. But yeah, I'm just like, but like, on surface level, I was like, man, there's just a lot of shitting on women in this movie. And then you watch the horrible things happen to these guys because they're assholes to women.
Right.
I was like, okay, like there's it seems to be an appropriate level of comeuppance. I'm sure we could ask 100 different people, and they're going to give us at least 50 different answers to whether or not this is X, Y, or Z, this, that, or the other. But yeah, I think you're right, Charlie. I think you probably know better than I do because you're probably more familiar with the director and whatever. But I felt like it was important to bring up because it is so in your face in this movie that is clearly a point they're trying to make, but the exact point people might take differently.
But then you have the women saying, the reason why we have to regain this power is because the power has been taken away from us, and men have usurped power and warped history, and
which is not incorrect. You know, like,
fair enough.
Oh, how great were those scenes where they're talking to each other when they're getting ready for the ceremony? Like, these old women are using this, and you're watching the captions, and you're listening to them saying the Spanish words, but you're seeing the captions as, like, some of the terms that are used and things, you're like, oh, my God.
It's just like... when she's like, I think I love him, and they're all like, oh,
yeah,
what the hell is wrong with you?
Just gasp, clutching their pearls, and like, no, you use men for what they're for. Fucking coprophagia, bondage,
necrophilia.
You know, and you're like,
we sent you to the worst schools. How did you turn out so good?
She's like, oh, I heard you went to such and such, you know, saints such and such is in Germany. Yes. Have you fucked all the priests yet? I'm working on it.
You know, like, there's that Addams Family vibe,
it
too.
It really is, yeah. And, like, it's delightful. Yeah, and again, it's a little bit of, like, all those other weird kind of fun witch movies where they kind of turn that on its ear, and it has that. This one just has the harder edge where they're going to actually kill somebody.
It is another one of those that, like, there are way too many things going on in this movie for it to be an American film, I feel like, where you would have taken maybe one or two of the four movies and
it's a long flick, gone too. With it. This movie's about 2 hours.
I would say the only time I felt the drag was at the end when they're, like, right before they're summoning the All-Mother, and then when it's just chaos for 20 minutes, it seems like, and again, you get those whole, like, oh my god, that guy almost died, and then he got saved at the last minute, oh, but now she's coming over here, and you just, like, you know that they're keeping the whole cast alive, so I feel like that could have got trimmed a little bit, but at the same time, you've got the crazy fertility goddess running around, and it's hard for that to be boring. I think looking at the notes, it was before they summoned the goddess. Like, all of that lead up where they had the speech and then the other speech and then back to the cops and then the crazy chanting and then people start flying. I was like, okay, we gotta be getting somewhere. And then there was a giant,
I think it pays off,
Harry Snatch, and, you know, all is forgiven.
Oh, Harry Snatch and all is forgiven. They lost Harry Potter. I don't think I have anything specific I need to make sure I talk about in this one anymore.
Yeah, most of my stuff is just...
We bounced around, but yeah, mostly this is just... It is... what was the Korean one we just watched?
Rigor Mortis.
Rigor Mortis,
yeah. I kept thinking of that. the tone is different, but it is one of those things where it's like, dude, just watch it.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on, and you're just going to kind of roll around in this world and feel like you're part of it. And you just have to kind of see it. It's just better that way. So, yeah, I fucking love this movie.
All right, you want to put a number on it?
Sure. This... Yeah, I think this will probably get my highest rating for this week. This will get my 9 out of 10... 9 out of 10 carefully rendered CGI pubes.
These are a few of my favorite things. CGI pubes that are carefully rendered. See? So good. Yeah, I would give this maybe 8 out of 10 hairy butt cracks of the all-mother.
Just keeping it all in the wheelhouse. Yeah. It's good.
Well, it's just shocking. You're like, wow, she's anatomically correct. Huh, well done.
Yeah.
Well
done. No, I'm sorry, what did you say? I wasn't paying attention to your number.
I said 8.
8? All right.
Charlie. Charlie.
One last thing I wanted to point out real quickly is that the lady who plays the grandmother, Terrell Pavez, is like had a career back in the 60s
nice.
Of acting, and she's that woman that voice, just that voice, that rumbling, curdling, kind of growly, kind of the, I just, there's something about that voice. It's just like, oh, she says, and then at one point they're like scolding, like, well, you bit him, and there's another thing. It's like, well, you know, whatever, and like she just has that kind of like obstinate child aspect, but she's this very austere older lady with this amazing voice. I could watch that woman in anything. I just think she's great. She's just such a presence. I love this movie. I really, really do. It's one of those things that's just so creative and it's so energetic. And, so I want to do a 9 out of 10 skinny wild boars with no hair on the side of the road.
Nice. Good pull. Awesome. Let's take a break.
And we'll be back with our film for next week. So for next week, we are going to take a little departure since all of us are hella busy. We're going to dial it back to just one movie, and it is the sequel to a movie that we talked about for a good hour and a half.
Yeah, we feel like this one movie will not take us long to watch, but will give us a full episode's worth of bullshit.
Yep, so we're going to do ABCs of Death 2. It's rentable on Amazon.com right now, and will be in theaters pretty soon. But, you know, you can watch it on the tubes. And our short is going to be Brent Sims' Grave Shivers, which is a set of 3 short films that some dude kickstarted.
Yeah, which is dope. I always love seeing something from Kickstarter come to fruition.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So we got 29 short films is what we're going to do next week.
I think we're going to employ one of those chess timers and kind of little clocks or something.
I think we kind of did that last time we did ABCs of Death. We had to kind of go, everybody gets to talk for like this much time. We'll do something like that. But part of the reason we're doing that is because this following weekend is Halloween.
Yeah.
And we all know you're going to be busy and we're going to be busy. We'll be busy doing some performing stuff even. In fact, I'm going to plug some shit right now.
Oh.
Your last chance to see The Secret of Graythwaite Manor, the first original Fearless Comedy production.
Hey, I know the guy who wrote that.
Yeah, written by Joshua Mr. Skullhead Knight, the guy that's sitting
dick.
Right here.
Yeah.
Which I went and saw again last night.
Yeah.
And I brought my son, too. Austin and I went and saw Graythwaite last night and had a ball. Sat with Scully and Manna and I forget the guy's name, Brandon?
Yeah, possibly.
But had a great time. And Austin, we got done. I'm like, what'd you think? He goes, I didn't get all the jokes. Because I could see I'd laugh sometimes and he'd kind of look at me like, why didn't I think that was funny? And he's like, but I liked it. The best part, though, was like when the vampire bites the guy, you can see how he's trying to make it look like he's really biting the guy. It's like, way to go, dude.
Oh, man, I want that full quote.
Yeah, it was really dope. But, yeah, so Secret of Graythwaite Manor, the last, I believe it's just 2 shows, Friday and Saturday.
Yep, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. at the Brian Lake Bowl. So you can hit the Brian Lake Bowl website to reserve tickets in advance. Up until the day before the performance you want to see, the day of, you just have to show up at the box office, which opens about an hour before showtime. So always best to get your tickets online in advance. The other things going on this particular weekend that will start later in the evening, if that's easy for you to attend, The Uptown Theater will be doing Rocky Horror Picture Show as its midnight movie, both on Halloween the 31st and on November 1st. Vilification Tennis will be opening the show for both of those nights. We'll be doing a round of Vilification Tennis, different performers each night. I will be performing on November 1st, opening for that show. Different set of four vilifiers will be performing on Halloween night, which is fine because on Halloween night, what you should be doing after you go see Graythwaite Manor is going to the Twin Cities Horror Festival to catch a show and then catch the midnight movie, Deathbed, The Bed That Eats, with yours truly, Josh and Dan Peltzman, doing a live riff of that movie. And we welcome your input as audience members as well.
Yeah, heckling is encouraged.
Heckling is not only tolerated, it is encouraged.
It is a survival instinct.
Yes, because, you know, go back and check through our archives, find the Deathbed episode, and watch how much joy we had and how horrible it was, and realize that you could now sit in a theater and watch this with us and make your own jokes along with us.
And you know what the best thing about that show is?
What's that?
Free.
Fucking free! Did we mention it's free?
Yeah. You just gotta go.
Wait, it's free?
It is free.
It costs you only the sleep that you will not be having.
Exactly. So, yeah, we're starting around, what, midnight, 12:30, something like that?
Yeah, it starts at 12:30.
12:30, Halloween night, technically the day after Halloween morning.
But we're not that guy.
We're not that guy.
The sun has not come up yet, so It's Halloween night.
So, yeah, we will be doing some shows and having the funds and then going to make the funds of the shows. Right. So
in the meantime, we would really welcome your feedback on this and all of our shows at facebook.com/horrordog or at horrorshowhotdog.com or at horrorhotdog on the Twitter or reddit.com/r/HSHD. Yes, we have four different social media and they are all different names because
we're bad at this.
I was going to say I'm good at this, but I was going to say it sarcastically.
Oh.
So, thanks for tuning in. We will see you next week with ABC's of Death 2 and
Grave Shivers.
Sure. I've been Josh this entire time, and I'm just going to say bye.
As far as you know, I've been Matt. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night from Austin, everybody. Take care.
Hold her long forever.